Acme is making your grocery shopping easier than ever. Download the Acme mobile app to find digital deals, earn reward points, or shop for delivery or pickup. Acme, fresh foods, local flavors.
93.3 WMMR, audio on demand, presents the Preston and Steve Show podcast. And now, Preston and Steve's news update with Kathy Romano.
And it is Thursday, June 25th. Good morning, Kathy.
Good morning. In the news this morning, an Amish teenager's disappearance in Lancaster County has prompted a manhunt across the state. Police say 18-year-old Linda Stoltzfus was never returned to her family's home in the rural village of Bird in Hand after church on Sunday. They say that she was last seen wearing a tan dress. On Monday, volunteers searched through fields and streams. Local roads were shut down, and 15 horses with riders were dispatched to help in the search. The FBI is also assisting with the search. Investigators have not ruled out foul play, but they say that she may have left on her own. Anyone with information is asked to contact the East Lampeter Township Police.
That last name is very, very common out there.
Oh, is it?
Yeah, yeah. And in fact, if you've ever bought a shed out in Lancaster County around that area, Stolfus is the name.
Tremendous. Okay. And if you remember, there was that case of the guy who had who was keeping the kids prisoner. Basically, that was his last name as well. He was in that community. Remember, wasn't it Stolfus?
Well, he had the kids, but he was out in Bucks County. That guy, right?
I'm misremembering.
I think that was the family. The mother and father maybe had that last name. The guy out in Bucks County. I forget what his last name was. Yeah, a 5.8 magnitude earthquake hit California at about 10:45 a.m. local time Wednesday. The epicenter was near Cardigo, about 180 miles north of Los Angeles. People at several businesses near Lone Pine and Bishop told ABC News while there was shaking, it was intense, but they didn't see any damage, they said. Several rock slides were reported as well.
They said the shaking, though, helped promote social distancing because it shook people further apart. So there's a plus side to that.
I was in Lone Pine last summer, Steve. That's where Alabama Hills is. It's a really cool spot. It's on the east side of Mount Whitney, and so if you're going to hike Mount Whitney or go up into that part of the Sierra Nevada, you can stay in Lone Pine. But I'll be curious to see how bad the damage was, because 5.8 is pretty
moderate.
Significant. It's not huge. It's not certainly an earthquake that can do some damage.
As long as Otisburg remains intact.
Yeah, right. Well, that's right along the fault line.
Right along the fault line. Lex Luthor.
So Otisburg.
Some shaking was also felt in Los Angeles. This comes a day after a 7.4 magnitude quake hit Mexico near the resort of Huatulco. Huatulco.
Okay, so Zihuatanejo.
Killing at least six people and damaging hundreds of homes, according to the Associated Press. At least six others were hurt, including two people in Mexico City, more than 300 miles from the epicenter.
Cool. Yay!
Yeah.
What happened?
New York. I can't print anymore, so it's all on my computer, so I just have to...
She thinks about her own story sometimes.
There's a little lag.
Mexico.
Yeah.
Those poor people. I assume construction codes are more relaxed down there.
Just give me a second.
Why can't you print
switch
anymore?
My page? I don't know. It wasn't working when I got back, and I just started doing it on my computer because that's how I was doing it at home.
Right. Okay.
New York, Connecticut, and New Jersey will require visitors from states with high coronavirus infection rates to quarantine for 14 days upon arrival beginning Thursday, the three governors said. We now have to make sure the rates continue to drop, New Jersey Governor Andrew Cuomo said on Wednesday at a video briefing with Governors Phil Murphy of New Jersey and Ned Lamont of Connecticut. We also have to make sure the virus doesn't come on a plane again. What was presented as a travel advisory affects three adjacent northeastern states, and after time, we're able to check the spread of the virus this spring as New York City became a hotspot for the pandemic. And the governors are now warily eyeing other states with rising caseloads, trying to keep history from repeating itself. The state's health departments will provide details on how the rule will work, Murphy said. Visitors to New York from affected states will be informed that they need to quarantine and that violators could face a mandatory quarantine and a fine. Cuomo said.
That could be hard to enforce that as people come in. You know, it's the honor system, and following up on that might be difficult.
Yeah, a friend of mine is traveling, and I just told her, you know, yesterday, and she's going to one of these states, and she's like, I'm like, okay. The quarantine will be enforced.
Turn her in.
Yeah. the quarantine. But I think that's what happens. Yeah. Like, if they want to go,
they're going to go.
Then they're going to go. And when they come back, that's that. The quarantine will be enforced differently in each state. The announcement comes as summer travels to the state's beaches, parks, and other attractions, not to mention New York City, which would normally be put into high gear with visitors. Visitors from states over a set infection rate will have to quarantine. As of Wednesday, states that are over the threshold were Alabama, Arkansas, Arizona, Florida, North Carolina, South Carolina, Washington, Utah, and Texas. In sports this morning. Baseball will face a few changes this year. It will be a 60-game regular season. No spitting. Pitchers can't lick their fingers, but they can't have a wet rag in their pockets. No high fives. No fist bumps. No hugs.
What teams, the f*** is it?
Team staff, not including players, will wear masks in the dugout, and National League teams will have a designated hitter. Opening day will be on July 23rd or 24th, and the MLB will attempt to cram 60 games into about 66 days. Players report to camp on July 1st for spring training 2. The Phillies schedule
it's
will...
Summer training. It's not spring
yeah,
anymore.
Right. That's right. The Phillies' schedule will include mostly games against the National League East and the American League East, and all teams will stay in their geographic regions to limit travel. Fans will not be permitted in the stands for the 2020 season, but the Phillies' entire schedule will be televised on NBC Sports Philadelphia and on national channels. Dallas Cowboys running back Ezekiel Elliott, who was diagnosed with the coronavirus 10 days ago, said he's back to feeling normal, but he has not been cleared by doctors to work out. The three-time Pro Bowler said that he was concerned about the safety of players, with the NFL preparing to return to training camps in July. In an interview over Twitch, Elliott said, "I just don't know how they can keep the players healthy. You got to put the health of the players first." And speaking of the Dallas Cowboys, Preston and I were watching this morning a video of, and Preston, I had no idea this was his name, but Haha Clinton Dix.
Oh, yes. He used to play for the Packers.
So he was riding a scooter in his driveway on the side of his car, and when he got to the back of his car, there was a bear and a cub there.
Oh, my God.
Freaks out, throws the scooter, and runs away.
Wow. The Bears were chasing a cowboy.
It works out perfectly.
And finally, Brooks Koepka will not play in this week's Travelers Championship after his caddy, Ricky Elliott, tested positive for the coronavirus. The world's fourth-ranked player announced the decision yesterday and is among five players to withdraw, a group that includes Webb Simpson, the number five player in the world. Both players tested negative but said that they were exercising caution by withdrawing. The PGA Tour announced that it will enforce extra testing and stricter monitoring of protocols. And that's what I have for you this morning.
All right. Thank you very much, Kathy. A fine morning that we have before us as you head out the door. You'll see it's a beautiful sunrise today, various colors, and it's a good sign.
It's just a rush. You get up when you see that.
Yeah, so we do have good weather today, and we have a guest on the program. So there is an anniversary of sorts. It is from 2000. The Flyers had a game against the Penguins, and it went into five overtimes. It was the Eastern Conference semifinals, game number three, and there's going to be a replay of the game tonight on NBC Sports Philadelphia. And the man that was in the net for all eight periods of that game.
It's amazing.
Brian Boucher is going to give us a call this morning. I forgot about that.
It was insane, man. I stayed up to watch the whole thing. It was like 2:30 in the morning that it ended, and I was tired watching it. I can't imagine what it was like playing.
Yeah, especially, you know, he stayed in the net the whole time. We'll talk to Boucher later on this morning, and, you know, standard procedure as well with other things. We have stuff to give away and things to talk about, so we'll do that very... I've said thing like five times.
Whatever.
Yeah. You can say it again.
So we'll do that very thing. And
it's many things Thursday.
And other things. It's lots of things Thursday.
All right.
On the President and Steve Show. So we'll go ahead and take a break, come back in a second, and the stupid question will be what we get to next with the entertainment report. So hang in there with us. We're going to have a good time today.
Get social with Preston and Steve and WMMR. Facebook, Twitter, you know, the usual places.
Say goodbye to juggling paper coupons and missing out on the best deals. Download the Acme mobile app today to have your own personal grocery guru right in your pocket. Use it to plan your shopping list like a pro. Get personalized deals on the products you buy most and choose your shopping style. Whether it's in-store, delivery, or drive-up, where an experienced Acme associate will carefully select, bag your order, even pick up your prescriptions from the pharmacy, and bring it all right to your car. Acme. Fresh foods, local flavors.
back with more of the Preston and Steve Show podcast.
So the stupid question this morning will get you a Fandango Now promo code to see Irresistible. If you answer this correctly, what year did Samuel L. Jackson host the MTV Movie Awards? Let's see if you know that. 215-263-WMMR. Samuel L. Jackson hosts the MTV Movie Awards. When was it? What year was it? So I'll do a time killer, go through some birthdays while we're waiting for your answer. Today is Thursday, June 25th. It's Jimmy Walker's birthday today.
J.J. Jimmy Walker?
That's the one. Good times.
Yep. Veteran of the Love Boat?
How many episodes do you think you've watched?
A couple. Yeah. The Love Boat? Yeah. Every one, multiple times.
Yeah.
It's unbelievable.
And Jimmy Walker was on there a couple
of
times?
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Did he say Dynamite he couldn't have?
No. He never said Dynamite.
Yeah.
He actually, remember the story with him and Good Times? He was as with Fonzie, he was a secondary character.
Yeah.
The focus of Good Times was supposed to be John Amos, and he became the breakout star. And that actually caused tension between John Amos and...
No kidding.
Well, because...
Yeah.
He got signed on to be the star. And then they clearly focused the show on Jimmy Walker.
Yeah. So he's celebrating his 73rd birthday.
We had him in studio. I can't recall. Like him?
He was okay.
He was okay.
That's about it. He doesn't like to dwell on the past too much and what he's really, really famous for.
Yeah. He did write, and this is legend. I believe I'm attributing correctly to him, but there used to be a club on Long Island called Chuckles, and people would sign the back wall, the stand-up comedy club.
Yeah.
And he said, great appearing at your club on my way down, he wrote.
Yeah. So Jimmy's 73 today. Actress Linda Cardellini.
Oh, yeah.
I love her too. Velma in the Scooby-Doo movies. She was in Mad Men, Avengers, Age of Ultron, so she has her place in the MCU. And then what's the show, Kathy, with her and Christina Applegate?
Dead to Me.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was really good. I liked that.
Did they wrap that up or?
It was. So it's two seasons. They set it up for there to be a third if they're.
Okay.
Yeah.
I watched some of the first one. I did like it. It's just I never went back to it.
A lot of shows like that. Yeah. So you are watching Prodigal Son, so everything's working out.
Yes, yeah. Yes. I have like three episodes left and I'm done. Linda Cardellini is 45. Angela Kinsey from The Office is 49.
Oh, she's one of the Office ladies. They do a podcast with, it's her. And,
yeah, she's the one who's stuck up and dating Dwight Schrute.
Yeah, she's traded some of the Office fame to continue to talk about The Office, which is cool.
And it's also Ricky Gervais's birthday.
Oh, the creator.
Created The Office in England, and he is celebrating his 59th birthday today.
Gervais is great, obviously. The British version of The Office, which is, I think, just one season. I'm not sure, one, maybe two seasons. Is really good, but the American version of The Office is, I find, much funnier. But I saw yesterday someone did some deep faking and replaced every character on The Office, the American version, with Arnold Schwarzenegger.
Oh, my God, I have to see this.
It is hilarious.
Okay,
yeah.
All right, I'm on board.
Yeah, unbelievable.
I'm on board. A very talented young actress by the name of McKenna Grace is 14 today. I first saw her in the movie with Chris Evans, Gifted, where she plays a mathematical prodigy of sorts.
She's great.
And she's one of those kids, you're like, a kid this young is acting like
that? She's a kid?
Yeah. And she also played Tanya Harding in I, Tanya as a little kid.
Oh, yeah.
And she's also in Annabelle Comes Home.
Annabelle.
That's right.
By the way, again.
Annabelle.
Annabelle Comes Home. Is a good movie.
Is it a good movie?
It is really. Not to go off as if anyone's going to watch it based on my recommendation, but there's a room full of all these haunted objects, and the way the story lays out, Preston, it's very Stephen King-ish. I think you would like it.
All right.
And you get to see Annabelle.
I remember when Annabelle came home. McKenna Grace is 14 today.
She's young Carol in Captain Marvel. I didn't realize that.
Oh, really?
Yes. Oh, yeah, and the go-kart. And,
yep.
Yeah.
All righty, then. Tim Fim, the singer, was with the band Crowded House. Before that, he was in a group called Split Ends. Always liked his voice. Always liked Crowded House.
Oh, my God. Don't Dream It's Over is one of my favorite songs of all time.
I liked that period of MTV, which was kind of the focus of music at that time, where they kind of started to get into lighter, poppier stuff. And
I love that. And the video for Don't Dream It Over still remains one of my favorite. Is the walking through the house. Do you remember that one?
I do remember. Yeah. So he is 68 today. Carly Simon, largest mouth on a female singer ever. is 75 today. I always like Carly Simon.
I wonder if she ever made out with Steven Tyler.
Yeah,
the amount of suction that would be generated.
Yeah.
So my mom always liked her, and I hated her because there was a girl in school named Carly who was so annoying, and because her name was Carly, I was like,
you hated her.
I hated her.
Anyone named Carly?
It was terrible, and I was like, I hate this woman.
I know those associations, but someone ends up being collateral damage because they remind you of someone you hate.
Yep. So Carly Simon is 75, and supposedly this song was about Warren Beatty, right?
That's what I heard. Yeah. And
you're so vain.
Yeah. She was married to James Taylor for a while. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So she's 75 today. And also singer Edie Floyd, I guess a one-hit wonder of sorts, because she did Knock on Wood.
And then it was redone.
You better knock, knock, knock on wood. Yeah, I think she did the original version because she's 83.
Right. Yo.
So
I'm knocking on wood and no one's coming. I pooped myself.
And then nobody's coming to help you?
I've been
you?
Knocking on this wood for an hour. I'm
sorry.
I'm in my own filth.
Mrs. Floyd.
But then, so it was remade as a disco hit.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. And man, I can't remember who did that. I should know that.
She was very androgynous looking. She was like Grace Jones, I remember.
Yeah, I used to play that record.
I remember the waitress in Roadhouse sang it on stage.
Yes, she did do that.
Jeff Healey's band.
You are correct. Yes.
She was good.
And then.
Wait, so who wrote it? Whose birthday are we celebrating?
Edie Floyd, or Eddie Floyd.
It's Eddie Floyd's a guy.
Oh, I'm sorry. Yeah. Eddie, he is 83.
Yeah.
Is this
I'm
the same
still knocking
song?
Out of work.
Yeah. Is this the same song?
It is. Uh-huh. And then it was remade, Nick.
Amy Stewart. That's who it was.
All right, there we go. Right. Okay. This whole time we've been celebrating Eddie Floyd's birthday.
Eddie, not Edie.
Right.
All right.
Eddie, they're talking about you, Sean, WMMR. What did they do?
Talking about you. And then the last birthday I saw is Busy Phillips. So there's Busy and Bijou. They're related, right?
No.
No?
No, because we talked about it on Bijou's birthday.
Damn it.
Yeah.
Now, one of them is related to the captain that was taken over by the Somali pirates.
Yes, that's right. So Busy Phillips is related to Captain Phillips.
Yeah, Busy Phillips is not in the mom and the papa's family, the John Phillips, any of those Phillips. She's her own entity in the Phillips world.
But Bijou is.
Right.
And she was on Freaks and Geeks with Linda Cardellini. Yes. Also
and Annabelle.
And Annabelle.
No.
I'm glad we're bringing that back.
Annabelle.
Busy is 41 today. All right, let's see if we can get an answer to the stupid question. What year did Samuel L. Jackson host the MTV Movie Awards? 215-263-WMMR, our number. It is Dave that I'm going to. Yo, Dave, how you doing, man?
Hi, good morning.
Dave, what year did Samuel L. Jackson host the MTV Movie Awards?
1998.
He's right. Hang on, Dave. Sorry, I spoke over the Dave clip there. All right, so for Dave, we got a Fandango Now promo code to see Irresistible, written and directed by Jon Stewart and starring Steve Carell and Rose Byrne. And that is available on demand on Friday from Focus Features. Are we going to have her on tomorrow? Is that going to happen or not?
Haven't heard nothing.
Love Rose Byrne.
She's so awesome.
She's great. All right, I have some news to share with you. Dennis Quaid is now married to Laura Savoie. I guess that's how you say her name, S-A-V-O-I-E, Savoie.
Yeah.
And on Wednesday, news broke the couple had eloped in a secret ceremony on June 2nd.
It's so secret, we're hearing about it on the other side of the country.
Quaid and Savoie tied the knot at a seaside resort in Santa Barbara with only their pastor as witness. And they exchanged traditional vows. It was just them alone. So that's very, very sweet.
You know, many times when you have something, a relationship like this, where the age divide is many, many decades, you're like, oh my God, that's depressing and disgusting. He's in such good shape.
I know. Yeah.
He looks so good that he actually looks appropriate with her.
So you mentioned the age difference. It's 39 years.
Yeah, 39 years.
He is, how old is he, Nick? He's 70. No, I mean, he's 66 and she's 27.
But I mean, look at this picture.
Do you think she has issues or
any issues?
Yeah, something like that.
That could be part
Daddy
of it.
So
we talked about women being attracted to older men, but
I'm attracted to older women.
Many decades.
How about women being attracted to older, successful men?
Yeah,
yes,
with money.
That might be a
that
part
could be
of
it too.
Too.
Yeah.
So he said it was beautiful. He said just looking into her eyes, she was the most stunning bride. Quaid and Savoie had planned to say I do in April in Hawaii.
They had a princess wedding, Preston. It was a theme.
They decided to postpone their nuptials amid the coronavirus concerns. They were going to do it at Craig T. Nelson's house.
Yeah.
In Hawaii. Coach.
Mr. Incredible?
Mr. Incredible, too, yes. Back in October, Quaid revealed that he had proposed to Savoie after several months of dating. He popped the question to the 26-year-old, at the time, PhD student, while on location in Hawaii promoting his film Midway.
39 years difference.
Yep. And he said the age difference really doesn't bother us, is what he said.
He's actually good in that movie, Midway. I didn't watch it. I didn't know what to expect, but it really captures that sort of battle because they're using all this CGI stuff that wasn't available for a long time, and it's pretty good.
What was the secondary plot line? Was there another plot line?
They're trying to get booze from a local liquor store, and so they're working on fake IDs.
All right, so there was no love interest thing going on the side?
No, it's the Battle of Midway.
Quaid, by the way, was previously married to PJ Souls from 78 to 83, Meg Ryan from 91 to 2001, and Kimberly Quaid 2004 to 2018.
Quaid!
So he's going for a fourth run
at
marriage with a 27-year-old, and he is in his late 60s.
I wonder if she'll survive him.
Hmm. Following George Floyd's death at the hands of police, cop shows have been under the microscope. Cops itself was canceled, and many wondered how NBC's hit sitcom Brooklyn Nine-Nine would address the Black Lives Matter movement. And fans got an idea when star Terry Crews revealed that several scripts had to be completely tossed and season 8 essentially restarted. He said that showrunner Dan Gore had 4 new episodes all ready to go, and they just threw them in the trash. We had to start over, and right now we don't know which direction it's going to go. Crews added that the cast has had a lot of somber talks about it and deep conversations, and he said, we hope through this we're going to make something that will be truly groundbreaking this year. We have an opportunity here, and we plan to use it in the best way possible.
The show is unbelievably funny. It's got a great ensemble. I'd be curious to see where they go.
Yeah, Andy Samberg, Stephanie Beatriz, Andre Brower, and Melissa Fumero of the cast. So all actors want a hit, but according to Jennifer Aniston, there's definitely such thing as too much success. In a roundtable talk with The Hollywood Reporter, she opened up about breaking free from Rachel Green's shadow. She said, I could not get Rachel Green off my back for the life of me. I could not escape Rachel from Friends. Just Rachel from Friends. It's on all the time. And you're like, stop playing this effing show. I completely fought with myself and who I was in this industry forever because it was just constantly about trying to prove I was more than that, which is the standard typecast type of thing, right?
It is. And so, you know, obviously Friends achieved a pop culture level that doesn't always happen with sitcoms, but it did. And now it continues to live on. But she's had a long career now.
She's gotten beyond that.
See, I would have thought it would have been the other way, Preston. The chick from Leprechaun. Yes. What's she doing on Friends?
But she changed her nose.
Yeah,
and
you couldn't tell.
I mean, and don't get me wrong, I love her, but she has no range whatsoever. Every single character she plays is basically...
Most of them. Yeah. There was a movie called Cake that she did where she took a real dramatic turn. It's a very depressing movie.
It's at the beauty pageants, right? Or am I thinking of a different one?
No.
There was the one where she played the...
I know the one you're talking about. No, that was... I forgot what that one was called, Steve. No, this is where she was in a really bad car accident. She was in extreme pain all the time.
I never saw it. It's good?
I've only seen parts of it, but I was like, wow, okay. Yeah, she can go beyond the whole Rachel thing. But you're right, Casey. Like in other comedies and so on, in lighter movies, it's very similar to that Rachel
character. I thought she was really good in The Morning Show, the Steve Carell vehicle.
Okay,
and she was not Rachel on The Morning Show.
Yeah. So she said that 2002's The Good Girl helped. She said The Good Girl was the first time I got to really shed whatever Rachel character was, and to be able to disappear into someone who wasn't, that was such a relief to me.
The original title of that movie, by the way, was The Good Rachel, which she fought against.
She said, but I remember the panic that set over me thinking, oh, God, I don't know if I can do this, but maybe they're right. Maybe everybody else is seeing something I'm not seeing, which is you're only the girl in the New York apartment with the purple wall. So I was almost doing it for myself just to see if I could do something other than that. And it was terrifying because you're doing it in front of the world, but she's doing just fine.
Yeah, and she talked about it, and she's honest about the fact also that people would die to get a show like that.
Sure.
And you don't want to seem ungrateful.
The beauty pageant movie was called Dumplin's.
That's it.
Which is another thing you can eat, like cake.
I understand.
Exactly. Thank you.
I couldn't get through that movie.
No. It was just okay, I thought. Yeah. But, Nick, you enjoyed it, right? Okay.
Well, you got to watch Dumplin' first and then have cake.
Okay, right. All right. Jeff Ross, longtime friend of the President Steve Show, denying allegations that he engaged in a sexual relationship with a minor. On Monday, the comedian and Dancing with the Stars alum issued a statement on Twitter in response to resurfaced allegations that he had pursued a sexual relationship with a 15-year-old girl starting in 1999. He said, this story is old news. He said, it's taken a lot of discipline for me to not respond until now because I believe that this is a mental health issue and I support people when they're hurting. He said, but let me be clear. These disgusting allegations asserted against me are absolutely not true. I have never engaged in any sexual relationship with a minor. His accuser came forward with their story in an October 2019 Facebook post alleging that the actor raped her while she was asleep. He said, or apparently according to the post, it said, I've only just recently realized just how effed up all this is and was, and then dash, I seriously do not want any predator to ever get away with stuff like this. Okay, so in his statement last week, Ross claimed that his accuser and her husband have been, quote, harassing me for years and that he plans to take legal action based on these untrue, horrific allegations. He said no one, no matter how sick they are, should be allowed to continue to try and benefit from false stories while attempting to destroy others. He said, I'm proud of my reputation, not just as a comedian, but as a human being and an ally to women. The accuser, who did not share her name publicly, did not immediately respond to requests for an interview. Ross continued in his social media post, however, to state that the culture surrounding comedians that is currently being called out by victims is real. He added that he supports reforming the comedy environment to be less predatory. He said the dangerous environment currently being exposed at the comedy clubs is real. I wholeheartedly support change and vow to do more to make my community safer for everyone. Although this accusation is false, he continued, saying, I want there to be no doubt my commitment to victims of sexual assault, love and respect. And that is from Jeff Ross.
So you reported on the situation with the cast of Riverdale and this person or persons were accusing a couple of them of sexual harassment or misconduct. And then you found out that they were saying, look what we can get away with when we try to do something like that. They were trying to make an example of that.
Yeah.
And it was so, you know, it's possible. I mean, we you know, we don't know. We know Jeff is a friend of the show and he always seems to be on the up and up.
Yeah. He's also pointing out that, you know, stuff like this doesn't exist. So, you know, you got to do your diligence and investigations as well. All right. So according to reports, Ryan Reynolds, to reports, will be appearing as Green Lantern in the Snyder Cut of Justice League, which is set to hit HBO Max next year.
This would be wild. There's two different sources are reporting this.
Supposed to be a cameo.
Yeah.
Reynolds, who previously appeared as Hal Jordan alongside his wife, Blake Lively, in the 2001 film Green Lantern, which didn't do that well. The Green Lantern franchise has been something of a boogeyman since, as Warner Brothers has yet to figure out a way to work the character and the Green Lantern Corps into the DCEU. In the Amazonians' battle against Steppenwolf's force in Justice League, you can actually see a lantern briefly.
Yeah.
And then
it's
that's
cool.
It. Yeah, it was really awesome. Yeah, they showed all these different warriors from around the, you know, universe, I guess, fighting against Steppenwolf. It's just for a moment you can see a Green Lantern. But other than that, the Intergalactic Militarized Law Enforcement Organization is yet to make their debut in the franchise. At this time, there's currently a Green Lantern Corps series from producer Greg Berlanti in the works over at HBO Max. According to initial rumors, that series is not only set to feature more than one Green Lantern, but their infamous nemesis Sinestro as well. But Ryan Reynolds showing up as a cameo, that'd be pretty damn cool.
It would be cool, yeah.
Rebel Wilson has declared 2020 her year of health, and she's reaching her goals with a mix of workouts, walks, and revamped diet. The Pitch Perfect star kicked off her plan at Australia's Medical Wellness Center, Viva Meyer. A medical director previously told The Guardian, everything starts with the gut. The fundamental principle is that you can improve someone's health through digestion. Focus on whole foods like vegetables, fresh fish, and yogurt, and farting. Guests are encouraged to chew their food 30 times before swallowing.
I've heard this tip.
Yeah.
And to schedule meals at least 4 hours apart. Really?
I ignore that tip.
It's been around forever.
Yeah, Shirley Feeney used to do it, right?
This notion of chewing and chewing your food at least 30 times before you swallow.
There's a whole society of us slow eaters, and I find it fascinating.
Yeah.
I mean, like, taking the time to, I have no restraint. So
Nick is like a stork, really.
Yeah,
he'll
really
just
is.
Take the fish hole and
swallow.
Like an alligator, you know? But she looks phenomenal. So whatever is working for her is working.
Yeah, she does look great. So, yeah, exactly.
Isn't it wild that in a year of a worldwide pandemic, it's her year of health?
Yeah, good for her. Hey, man, it's something to focus on, you know?
Yeah.
So that's good. Speaking of that, Charlize Theron is opening up about parenting during these challenging
times. I was
waiting
for this.
I know. She tells ET, as a parent, it's been a difficult time.
Is it difficult to be a parent now? Are you doing the homeschooling?
This is E.T. with a sit-down. She said, I think all parents, we want to believe we have time. And the world has kind of shaken me in a way that I realize that I don't have time.
If you tug on this, some gore splat will come out.
Oh, my God.
You're a lovely woman.
There was a moment where I felt like a little piece of my children's innocence was taken from them during this period because I had to sit down with them and have really, really hard, honest conversations about some really ugly things in our world today that they need to know.
How old are her kids?
You know what I don't know, Case.
Okay.
She said, I want them to know because I want to raise two little warriors. She said, for parents out there, this is the moment where I think we shouldn't be shielding our children. I think it's important for us to stop hiding in the shadows and pretending like nothing's going on. I think we can do it in a way where we're not traumatizing our children, but where we're inspiring our children. My girls know that they have a place in this world, and they need to stand up tall and strong and proud, and that's the most important thing right now.
Charlize Theron is right.
Any idea how old?
Yes, they adopted two children, Jackson in March of 2012, and then somebody else in 2015. They don't have the name there, but Jackson is a transgender girl.
So I don't know if they were infants when they adopted them or not. So they would, if 2012, then at least 8 years.
Yeah,
old.
Jackson is now eight.
Okay,
at least eight. Yeah.
Okay.
All right, and she had in a recent interview scathing things to say about Steven Seagal. Did you read that stuff?
No.
Oh, gosh.
Did they work together?
I don't know where the connection was. Apparently, at some point, or there had been an audition, but she just savages him.
Yeah, wow. I think it started with she saw footage of him running.
Right.
And was so disgusted that she...
She does actually mention the... Yes.
No, does she really?
Yes, and his physicality and everything.
She called him incredibly overweight, and he's pushing people. He's overweight. He can barely fight. Look it up. It's ridiculous. He's shoving people by the face. It's a setup, so she's like questioning his martial arts abilities and basically calling him fat.
Yeah, yeah.
He has not been nice to women over the years.
Okay. Wow, interesting. Well, I want to read some of that stuff.
Yeah.
What else we have here? Keanu Reeves and his girlfriend Alexandra Grant have reunited with his Matrix co-stars, according to reports.
So he's back filming.
The pair were spotted at Berlin in Germany. Shooting in San Francisco has wrapped. The pair went public with
It's great to have you here, Keanu.
Oh, wow. It's Tony Bennett, everybody.
Absolutely.
Who's welcoming Keanu Reeves.
Why is he?
I'm always here. Okay. Yes. I'm the unofficial ambassador for San Francisco.
Okay. If it's San Francisco.
Whether it's real or in the Matrix.
Right.
Tony Bennett is there.
I'm actually sitting in an egg pod with tubes bored into the back of my head, and I don't care. I'm nothing more than a battery for the larger machine. Am I happy, though? As long as I'm in San Francisco, I'm happy.
Wow. So the poop and all over...
That's what's in my container, Preston. You notice there's no bathroom attached to this thing.
You just dump right
in. Dumping right in here.
That's what they do.
Right?
In San Francisco.
My hose came undone.
The city by the bay.
By the bay.
Mm-hmm.
Knee deep in poop.
Right.
For as far as the eye can see.
All right.
That's not Alcatraz. That's a turd.
A giant turd.
Did not know that island.
Yeah, there's
was
a
made
tidal
of
that makes it all accumulate right there.
Okay, all right, makes total sense. Wow. the pair went public with their romance in November. The 47-year-old artist previously told Vogue of her romance with Reeves, who is 55. Love at every level is deeply important to my identity. How's that for dodging the question?
Well,
I do not believe that isolation is the way. There is a period of isolation that I do as a painter, but I deeply value the experience of being in relationships.
Is there some of the, just improv that you have been known, to become known as?
Get to work with that?
I could work with that. All right, so Kathy heard me cursing loudly in the office this morning.
Yes.
Hulu's The Handmaid's Tale, the new teaser trailer came out.
Yeah.
And I was loving what I was seeing.
Yeah.
I love this show. It's my wife and I.
Right.
We absolutely love this show.
So why are you cursing?
At the end, it said coming in 2021.
What?
Dude.
Come on. Things had to.
I know. I didn't know.
God, season four already?
Yeah.
Wow.
So the new teaser sets up the action after June was shot and led to safety. What happens in the next few weeks will determine the future of this country, according to the.
I understand that The Floor is Lava is very similar, Preston.
It's just
on Netflix.
Watched that last night.
What'd you think?
I just watched one episode and I'm like, okay, I'm going to stop now.
You liked it, huh?
So much fun.
All right.
Okay. Nick Murphy was loving it.
Yeah.
It's really good. It's the production level on it and the music and the way they set it up, it's great.
Okay.
It's great.
I'm on board.
I love it.
All right. So anybody that has not watched any episodes of The Handmaid's Tale, listen, it is a great show, but it is a really tough show to binge.
Agreed.
Kind of like Ozark, you know. It's slow. It's dark. Like, whatever filter they're using.
So pace it.
I think
it's good to give advice like that because some people will suggest shows to binge that are not meant for binging.
I would say don't do more than 2 hours at a time. Do two episodes max at a time. Right. And now we find out.
It's so depressing?
Well, yeah. And also the pacing they're saying.
Yeah.
Yeah. With the dialogue and the delivery of it is kind of slow. There's a lot of setup. But Kathy, what drives it for me is just the effed up concept of it all. It's just like, whoa, man. The idea of this society blows me away. So take that. It's really heavy, heavy drama, but it's pretty intense.
That's funny that you say that, though, Case, that you can't binge it, because I just for the first time felt that way about a show, and it was Defending Jacob. I could only watch one episode at a time. Like, that was enough. Then you had to take a break, and I'd come back a few days and watch another one.
Yeah, so that one, they did, like, a Hulu recipe, right? They dropped three episodes or something like that, and then every week
did
a different episode, so I was able to do the same thing.
Yeah, and it was fine that way. You don't need to binge that show. Mm-hmm.
So Bradley Whitford is the one who says what happens in the next few weeks will determine the future of this country. He's great in that, too. The show will bow next year. Mm. But I am holding on to the fact that next month, is Umbrella Academy.
Umbrella Academy.
Oh, nice.
So I'm very much looking forward to
that. I think 2021 now is the pushback date for The Boys.
Years. Well, just the fact that it's coming.
Yeah.
That's a messed up show, too. Messed up superhero show.
What are you the most excited for?
Well, Stranger Things. What's that?
Stranger Things is this year. Is it this
Halloween,
year?
Halloween, right?
Isn't that
what we heard? I don't know.
I don't know, Case.
Wow, that's a really good question. For me personally, probably Handmaid's Tale, but then Stranger Things is so much fun.
Season 3 was great.
Yeah.
All the seasons were great. But now we know we're going to have a Soviet Russia thing going on.
Yes. But The Boys, that one I'm really excited about, too. That one hit me out of nowhere.
Yeah.
First episode, I'm like, oh, my God.
Yeah.
This is different.
Do yourself a favor and just watch the first 10 minutes of the first episode of The Boys.
Mm-hmm. You're like, oh, Jesus.
Oh, my God. Yeah. And you'll be hooked.
All right. Will Smith and Warner Brothers might find themselves courtside over the studio's upcoming film, King Richard. It follows the life of tennis greats Venus and Serena Williams' father, Richard Williams. TW3 Entertainment and Power Move Multimedia filed a lawsuit for, among other things, breach of contract on Wednesday against Will Smith's Overbrook Entertainment production company and Warner Brothers, as well as Richard Williams himself. And his son and the production company, Star Thrower Entertainment.
What's the issue here?
The complaint reads, this case represents an unfortunate and tawdry situation.
I hate tawdry things.
The cold and calculating misappropriation and interference with plaintiff's intellectual property. So TW3 Entertainment argues in the complaint that it had purchased the motion picture rights to any film
based in whole or in part on Richard Williams' life story or his book.
Well, can Will Smith kind of do a runaround on this and not make it King Richard, make it King Ralph, make it the sequel?
Yeah. Ooh, yeah. King Ralph 2.
Right, yeah.
I don't know. He could.
I mean, if you have all that stuff in place.
Yeah. What if you did that and then it had nothing to do with the first movie and then it was all about the Williams?
I don't know.
What was Steve, what was the biopic on 30 Rock for Janis Joplin? It was like Jamie Jorp Jomp or
Jopler,
something.
Janis Joplin. Yeah. That was one of the funniest things you'll ever see. They rewrite all the Wikipedia information on Janis Joplin. So when she's doing her research to this movie role, all the information is completely incorrect.
But they couldn't get the rights from Janis Joplin's estate, so they had to change everything.
Yeah. Janis Joplin.
That's funny. All right, a couple other quick things. North America's largest film festival is going virtual. The Toronto Film Festival announced that the show will go online September 10th through the 19th. Among the early movies confirmed for inclusion per deadline, Kate Winslet star Ammonite, I guess is how you say that. I don't know. Another Round, Concrete Cowboy with Idris Elba, Fauna from director Nicholas Pareda, Good Joe Bell. Good Joe Bell,
our boss?
Joe Bell is our group manager here.
Oh, my God.
It's the sequel to Good Will Hunting.
Wow.
Wait, it stars Mark Wahlberg.
What?
As Joe Bell?
What?
No way. Get out of here.
Oh, that happens all the time.
Yeah,
you know Joe gets that all the time.
Yeah.
Excuse me, Marky Mark.
Yeah.
Dude. No. That's because he walks around going, pow,
pow,
all the time.
Pow.
Hey, you're a fly, honey.
Yeah.
In the hallway, sometimes we think it's Mark Wahlberg.
Hey, Marky Mark. You want some good vibrations?
Wow, that's funny. Good Joe Bell. Okay. And there's a bunch of others. About 50 filmmakers and actors will help the festival deliver its program. So it's really funny to us, just to let you know, because Joe Bell looks just like Mark Wahlberg.
Well, if you just keep telling him. I told you guys about my friend that we just over the years, we would periodically have girls go up and tell him that he looks like Brad Pitt. So that he actually thinks that he resembles Brad Pitt a little bit.
You guys really did that?
Mm-hmm.
That is a great idea. That is an excellent idea.
You can wage sort of a mental experiment.
Yep.
Oh, that's
excellent. I mean, and it was years later. I was like, anybody ever tell you you kind of look like Brad Pitt? He goes, yeah, believe it or not, I get that a lot.
And did you ever fess?
No.
Oh, that's excellent. Oh, that is a great long-term scam.
Oh, so good.
Okay. One last story. Netflix reports that the company's 183 million subscribers are watching more international fare during the coronavirus lockdown. CEO Reed Hastings said that La Casa de Papel, which is also known as the Monkey Heist, has managed to garner 65 million eyeballs.
Could you want to watch the Monkey Heist?
And that Germany's...
Wait. Look at that monkey took a banana.
Isn't it the Money Heist?
Money Heist.
Wait, where did you get the monkey from? Perhaps the monkey is stealing the money.
I told you to take the money, not the monkey! What am I going to do with all these monkeys?
The monkey has eaten the money. I told you not to put the bananas in the same bag with the money. Shut up.
Oh my God, Preston, I'm sorry.
I'm such an idiot.
The falcon has flown. We've got the monkeys. Come again? We've got the monkeys. Right here on this paper, it says monkey heist.
La Casa de Papel means money heist.
Money.
Money.
I would like to watch the monkey heist.
Well, who wouldn't?
Oh, God.
And also, Germany's Unorthodox, I think I got that one right, and Italy's Summertime are doing well on Netflix. So.
God damn it, what are we going to do with all these monkeys?
Internationals. Listen, you can make money from monkeys.
Sure you can.
Mm-hmm. All right, let's do clips. Why not? A group of nuclear war survivors on a spaceship Sent a group of juvenile delinquents back to Earth in hopes of repopulating the planet in the 100.
Oh, my God.
Here star Marie Avgeropoulos discusses wrapping up shooting the final season right before quarantine. The final season.
The final season.
I've never heard of this in my life.
We've talked about it many times. And every time we talk about it, it actually gets good reviews, but let her rip.
All right.
We finished shooting on a Saturday when they kind of shut down the world on the Friday, I recall. So instead of like allowing us to have a wrap party on the Saturday, they said, no wrap party, not allowed. You're shooting on Saturday. We got to figure out the 100th episode of the 100. And then that was it.
Shut the f*** up.
The final season of 100 airs Wednesday, 8 o'clock, and that's on the CW.
We've talked about this for years.
It's terrible. I never remember it.
Yeah.
All right, next clip. Jerry Seinfeld tackles life's woes while performing in New York City in his latest stand-up special, 23 Hours to Kill. In this clip, Jerry discusses jumping out of a helicopter in the opening sequence. Here it is.
I don't know why I didn't think that would be that big a deal, but when we got down to doing it, it was a lot scarier than I thought it was going to be. I thought, well, it's water. I'm going to jump in the water. You know, what's the big deal? But when you're up, I think we were about 40 feet up, I really had a follow hard and just do it.
Shut up, dummy.
23 Hours to Kill is streaming now on Netflix, by the way. And that's it. That's all I got for you. Your entertainment report for Thursday morning, June 25th. Let's take a break. We're going to have Brian Boucher, formerly of the Flyers, on. There was a big event back in 2000 when they were in the playoffs with the Penguins. And there was a game. It was game number 3, went 5 overtimes. Is that the longest NHL game of all time?
It was at the point. I don't know if anything's passed it since then, but at that time, it was the longest modern-day NHL game in history.
And in honor of that, they're going to replay the game tonight. So we're going to talk to Boush, who, by the way, was in net for
the whole thing.
All 8 periods. So we'll talk to him a little bit later on. We'll take a break and come back in a second. Make sure you stay with us.
What's new? Glad you asked. The Black Keys. The Pretty Reckless.
When I tombstone, when I go, just put death by rock and roll.
Five Finger Death Punch.
New music, more of everything that rocks.
On 93.3 WMMR.
An interesting thing. There's so many weird things that have happened with coronavirus, COVID-19, however you want to package it. There have been, you know, some industries that have been doing terribly, and then there are some that are actually booming and they're busier than they've ever been. It's just nobody could have predicted what would be benefiting and would be going the other way.
You're absolutely right, and it's astonishing.
So here's something that we didn't think about, you know, like the whole toilet paper fiasco.
Yeah.
Pocket change has apparently become a short. There's a huge shortage of change.
Really?
Because people aren't using it.
I have like a purse filled with it. Oh, I guess that's why. Right. There you go. Because it's in my purse.
Yeah, it's in your purse. Yeah,
that's exactly it. So I've only been paying by credit, and a lot of the stuff that I've normally been paying cash for, like, you know, food at Wawa, lunch, things like that. I've been bringing my own lunch, so I've been and doing a lot of online shopping and stuff like that. So my cash exchange has been, very small. When I come home from work every day, I unload my pocket change. We have this gigantic mason jar. It's like 5 gallons. It's huge.
Yeah, yeah.
And then like every 3 or 4 years, we go and change it in. And it's, you know, it's like over $1,000 worth of change. So I haven't been doing that.
Of course.
I haven't thrown any change
in. And you're not putting it back into the system.
Yeah.
See, but there are some things, though. But obviously, I still buy my smack and I pay for my hookers with cash.
You have to.
Yeah. But nobody makes change in that.
Right.
You're
right. Right.
Around.
Yeah.
No.
Right.
It's
the hooker's definitely not giving you change.
Right. Yeah. Exactly. Yeah.
So banks around the U.S. are running out of nickels, dimes, quarters, and even pennies.
No kidding.
And the Federal Reserve, which supplies banks, has been forced to ration their supplies.
Huh.
According to Gay Dempsey, who runs the Bank of Lincoln County in Tennessee, nobody was expecting it. Dempsey's bank typically dispenses 400 to 500 rolls of pennies each week, and under the rationing order, her allotment was cut down to just 100 rolls, with similar cutbacks in dimes nickels and quarters.
So Republic Bank is the only bank that I know of that will that has those change counting things that doesn't charge you if you're not a bank member, right?
Yeah, we used to our bank stopped doing that.
Yeah, ours did too, and it pissed me off because they had this cool little thing that would light up and it looked like a little carnival. The kids would do it, and now it just sits there. Nothing's happening.
Why did they take those away? That was like kind of silly.
Know. But I do. I have the same thing as you, Preston. I have a giant 5-gallon thing, and I ended up last year. I exchanged all my money at the Republic Bank, $700 and some odd.
Whoa.
So yeah, I know.
Wow.
But I wonder if
I'm sorry, real quick. How much did it weigh?
A lot.
Oh my God, it's
so
heavy.
The thing is, I had to at some point, Nick. I had to take all the change out, and I ended up putting it into different. Coffee containers because after a while, because it's glass, the weight of the change will actually kind of, it'll break it. So they say once you get past like a quarter filled that you should probably
drop it off the roof.
Yeah.
Okay.
I fill it all the way up.
And yours is glass?
Yeah. And we've had it for years and years. But when we have to move it, you got to scoop a bunch of it out.
The whole family has to come
Yeah,
out.
Everybody's involved.
Come on, kids, coin scooping time.
Because, Casey, we usually, it's over $1,000. So some $1,200
been.
And 1 year it was $1,500. I mean, this is over
years.
You know, collecting for 3 or 4 years. Yeah.
Right.
Mine has like matchbox cars in it, fake coins from the cash register.
Bullets. Kathy, this is a long time ago. I was at the bank and I'm dumping all this change into. There was pot in there.
Do they have a pot machine in the bank?
I was like, oh, my God. Yes.
This is an extra $50?
Yeah.
I mean, it weighs it in grams, Steve, and you get the equivalent.
I want to convert this 8-ball to cash, please.
It was stems and seeds and buds. I was like, oh, my God.
I went to a bank yesterday, and I don't know if everybody's doing this or just the bank that I went to, but the doors are locked. Like, you can't just walk into the bank. You have to call for an appointment and let them know you're coming.
Okay.
Yeah.
Or throw a garbage can to the window.
Right.
I'm going to go to an anonymous caller about the coin rationing. Hi, you're on the air, anonymous caller.
Hi, good morning, gadzooks, bitches.
Gadzooks to you, bitch. All right, so what's the story with the change where you work?
Yeah, so actually I do work for a large corporate bank. We have a very large presence in the Philadelphia area, and it's true. The U.S. Mint has not been able to produce any coin since mid-March when everybody shut down. So when you can't produce coin, there's nothing being circulated. And then also with all the businesses being shut down, no coin is being circulated. So essentially now that everything's starting to open back up, the Mint needs to quote-unquote catch up, but there isn't any coin. So they're only trying – they only have what they were able to produce up until mid-March.
Wow.
So now that you have businesses opening up and everything – so the particular location that I work for used to get boxes of coin for like a week, one box per branch per week.
Okay, wow. That's wild. So for the longest time, there's been a push, anonymous caller, to try to go away
to get rid of pennies,
pennies and certain coins and even paper currency and everything.
No. Paper currency is okay. Paper currency is still in circulation. It's just you're worried. I mean, even like my one particular client that I do support, they use dollars and half dollars. I'm like, dude, we have like boxes of those. Nobody uses those. It's your quarters, dimes, nickels, and pennies that you're concerned about. Yeah, so it's your main coin, particularly quarters, because that's what you use at like vending machines. That's what you use for games when you play games down the shore. So it's like you really have to think about those type of people. So if you have $4,000 worth of change, please deposit it.
All right.
We can do that. All
so
right.
the bitch is though.
Thank you.
We need those machines.
Where do we do
we
it?
Need those damn machines. Those Coinstar machines.
Well,
no rolling change is a freaking nightmare.
Well, we need them without the surcharge.
Yeah.
That's the thing because they have them at local grocery stores that we can go to. What we did find out though is instead of the taking that that surcharge, they were offering up like gift cards.
Okay.
What is the surcharge?
No, wait. No, the surcharge is in it. Instead of getting cash, we had to get gift cards. That's what.
Is it a lot of money?
It's 10%.
Yeah.
Well, you can go like the one that's a supermarket. The one that I go to the supermarket, you put the coins in, and produce comes out.
Wow.
Yeah.
We got to get Kathy, Fandango.
You know, for perspective, if you have $1,000 worth of coins, it's $100.
$100. Yeah. Sure.
And that's a lot.
For
that's
counting
why
your change.
Republic Bank is the only bank, and there's one right around the corner from us. So there's one in Wynwood. That's all. And listen, I don't, it's, I got no skin in the game. It's not like they're my bank of choice. They're just the only bank in the area that I know of that doesn't charge you anything for your change.
Nick, what is this article about here you pulled up?
So TD Bank, among others, was sued because they were shortchanging people, no pun intended, for the amount that they were putting in. So there was this class action suit against the TD Bank, which is a Canadian bank. I didn't know that. And
they took all of them out, right?
They had to remove all of the machines from their branches.
You know what? And it was probably some people who, you know, literally were nickel and diming.
Yeah.
Maybe because I can't see them really missing by a huge mark.
Yeah, you put in 200 pounds of change and you get $5 back.
If I'm putting my money in, I'm expecting there's going to be a margin of error.
Yes, especially for being able to take your 1,400 pounds of change.
Yeah. In fact, when we went by our bank and we brought all our change with us and we walk in and I'm like, where are the change machines? And they're like, no, we don't do it anymore. And they go, we can give you some of the sleeves to roll them yourselves.
I remember doing that as a kid.
I would roll my own sleeves to roll them myself. Wow.
I want the colorful decorated machine that goes bing, bing when I put the change in.
Nothing is over!
But I would have to put my account number on each one, and if it was short, they would deduct it from, if there was a difference in any way, they would deduct it from your account.
I remember one time between jobs years ago when I went to that Coinstar machine saved my life. I grabbed every bit of, I was looking to make a bill, a payment, and I didn't get paid for work that I had done, and so that obviously that chain reaction takes place. I'm like, what the hell am I going to do? Went to the supermarket and converted the change, and I was pulling from everywhere, and I left with hundreds of dollars worth of bills. I got the money back, but I'm like, oh my god, this is the greatest thing ever.
Yeah, it's real money.
It is real money,
as opposed to when are you going to go in? I'm going to put $200 worth of coins in the mail and send it to you.
Right? No, it's real money, and we treat it, or at least I treated it like found money, like. I don't know when you traded in your $1,000 as change, what you did with it, like if everybody got a treat or if you bought something for the family or.
I don't remember, but it was something family oriented that we were going to do with that.
Loosely free reinforcement.
Yeah, for everybody.
We usually do it before a vacation.
Yeah, right.
You know what? And I think that's what it was.
I think we spent that
on the vacation.
It ends up being the vacation fun for a lot of people or just something, fun.
In the beginning of Caddyshack, it's put the change in the college fund.
Yeah,
they would throw his change in there.
I thought though that there would be a shortage in coins. I mean, like I've gone to the store and been surprised at what they don't like. Yesterday, I went to Home Depot and I'm like, "Do you have the tomato cages?" And the guy was like, he laughed at me. He's like, "They fly off the shelves."
You dumb bitch.
I was like, I had no idea that we couldn't get vegetable cages.
Well, those the things that people are now gravitating to because they're staying at home and doing things and doing garden, that makes sense. But the shortage of coins absolutely makes sense. That's the first thing they told us. Well, try to refrain from using money because that's obviously a conveyor of the germs.
Right, right.
I'm going to go to Rich, who works at the Mint. Hi, Rich. Good morning.
Good morning, Gadzooks.
How you doing, sir?
I'm good.
Excellent. Yeah, so you work at the one in Center City?
Yeah, no, there's never been a shutdown. We had some alternating schedules, but they've been making money since this whole thing started.
Okay,
but
printing money.
What they're doing is they're still trying to keep up with the demand. So there's like a hiring blitz going on. So if people are interested, they can go to usajobs.com. Ah.
No kidding, at the Mint. Okay.
Yeah.
What do you do there, Rich?
I'd rather not say, but, okay.
That's right. Listen, if you wouldn't mind, I've been there before. I took a tour of the facility one time. Yeah. Can you have them dress it up a little bit? I was a little underwhelmed.
Really, was it?
I was unimpressive.
You know what's funny is they just put $7 million into that like 8 years ago.
Oh, okay.
Well, they have a roller coaster.
It was a long time ago that went, and I remember being excited to go because I love that type of thing.
Yeah, so do I.
And I was very underwhelmed with it. So
this stinks.
The tour is kind of like hokey, but it's great.
Stinks. what did you think of our tour, sir?
all right, thanks, man. We'll have to revisit that. But I remember, like, the displays were really outdated. There was, like, old wood grain paneling and stuff. I'm like, this is the U.S.
The guy has the cigarette in his mind. What'd you think?
Yeah.
There's only a handful of these in the country.
The Franklin Mint's gone, by the way. Have you driven down Route 1?
Oh, did they tear it down?
Gone, man.
Really?
Are they expanding the Wawa campus there? Because that Wawa campus gets bigger and bigger every year.
I thought there was residential stuff going going on back there. But that part of Route 1 is a mess right now.
That Franklin Mint building stayed up 20 years after that thing shut down.
And it was cool. It was a cool design to the building, you remember?
And my grandmother, when she ran out of things to do, she would take me there.
To the museum?
Yeah, I got to...
Please get lost. Please. There's a stranger there. Go touch his knee.
Yeah, that's what Ruth would do.
Hey, I'm gonna go to Michelle. Hey, Michelle. Good morning.
I'm gonna go look at the plates.
Hey, yeah, do that.
Hey, what, Michelle? How you doing?
Awesome. This is my first time on the air. I feel like you're kidding.
Well, listen, we need a better. Hey, what? You guys were okay, talking. Say hey, bitches again, please.
Hey, bitches.
Hey, what? There you go, Michelle.
You deserved it.
All right. So you wanted to mention something about the coin collecting.
Yeah, so actually my brother collected quarters growing up, so we always had one of those huge blue water jugs that you usually have in an office.
Sure. Yeah, they're great.
And we used to fill that, and we would go through it so he could get, like, all the state quarters. But we filled it to the tippy top a couple of times.
Wow.
And the first time we did it, it was over $5,000.
Wait, you only putting quarters in there? Is that what you said?
Well, we would go through to get the quarters.
Get them out.
Okay.
He would collect all the state quarters, so it was just always change. I think, you know, my parents helped us, so, you know, if we ever had change, and, you know, whenever my dad would, like, fall asleep on the couch, we'd take the coins out of the couch and, like, all that kind of stuff.
Yeah. And Michelle, you never think of that, that, you know, the coins that you're looking at or you're dismissing or putting in the barrel or putting in the tray when you're coming in and out as one day being $5,000, but it does eventually.
Absolutely. I mean, because you would rather have a dollar than four quarters most of the time.
Right.
So, you know, you get to that point, you're like, oh, my God, like, this is actually worth some money. Like,
I know, yeah.
Yeah. Interesting. $5,000, that's a hell of a take, man.
Well, you know, it's like that, the Thank app, you. I guess, is it Ashton Kutcher is one of the investors in the app, the Acorn app?
Yeah. Right. Nick Murphy does it. He loves it. He swears by it.
Right. So it'll round off the percentage of anything that you're purchasing and take the change that'd be that to the highest figure, and then donate that.
Yeah. My grandfather, actually Ruth's husband, Steve, the one that would drop me off at the Franklin Mint, he was a coin collector. And when he passed away, which was like 1983, I inherited his coin collection.
Worth anything?
I probably, but I have not looked at it in 20, 25 years.
Right.
And I have it. I have it at home. And it's just one of those things that right now it's just sitting in a container in the house.
It's too painful, right?
No, it's probably worse.
It's got to be. You'll always remember me by these coins.
Don't
spend any of them. Steal your Christmas trees from public land. Remember that.
Yeah. Learned a lot from it. But, you know, some of those, I find the history of it pretty fascinating. And there was a stretch where, like, if there was a little P on it, it meant that it was printed and minted in Philadelphia.
I'm going to piss on these. Now, watch carefully. These are the ones I'm going to piss on. You remember these. If you ever want to remember me, you take a whiff of that. It'll smell like meat.
The letter P. Pennsylvania.
Said that.
D for Denver.
Yes.
Okay.
Hey, I said a little P on there, though.
There's another P, but don't touch those.
But I think during...
Those are mostly the copper-based brown coins.
Right. I'm going to get this wrong, but like during World War II, they were all silver. They were, you know, the nickels became silver, stuff like, you know.
Right. Did he have the anomalous coins, Nick, where they do a run of a coin and there was an error in it and stuff like that?
You know what? I'll look for it when I get home tonight.
I'd be curious.
Yeah.
There were coins that were different metals because of World War II. They needed certain metals.
Right.
Styrofoam coin.
Those were not worth as much in the long run.
You got to be careful because they're crumbling.
Just crumble, yeah. What is this?
No, but you're right. You can look on the side of a quarter and you can see there's two different shades of of the metal, and they use,
zinc in the middle or whatever.
I used to have
argentium.
I used to have a full solid silver quarter from, I think it might have been like 1965 or something like that. Dude, I held on to for a long time.
I'll still find a 50 cent piece and get excited about it.
Yeah.
It's just a bigger.
Oh,
it's only 50 cents.
I love the Sacagawea coins, man. The gold ones, the dollar coins, those are awesome.
They're cool. Case, what's the name of the, because I know people are going to start
Republic Bank.
Republic Bank. These things are, if you can get these coins back into circulation, we're hearing, it'll make a big difference. But obviously, you don't want to get wonked with that heavy surcharge.
$2 bills. You guys still get $2 bills?
Sure.
Yeah.
Rarely.
Yeah. But that,
you know what's on the back?
Sometimes.
The Jefferson airplane.
Sure.
It's Paul Kantner and Grace Slick.
Wait a minute. I do know this.
Well, Jefferson's on
Jefferson's
the front.
Jefferson's on the front. Yeah. And on the back, it's not...
Arnold Ziffel.
No. Give me a hint.
It's a ceremony. It's not like a building.
Oh, it's the signing of the Declaration of Independence. Yes. Yeah, that's right.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
It's well not, done. Not a bris. It's not a bris.
A bris. What's with this? There's a rabbi on the back of this bill.
Why is this here?
My cousin likes to get those. Whenever he goes to the bank, he'll always get like a couple hundred of twos if they have them because he likes to leave those as tip money.
Yeah, yeah, it's fun.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's a little treat. Let me go.
It's a little treat.
It's a little currency you won't use and no one will accept.
Let me go to Mike. Hey, Mike, you're on the air. Good morning.
Good morning, guys.
Hey, what's up, buddy?
Photos.
Ah. Congratulations. Hey. So it says here you used to work at TD Bank with the coin machines and all that.
Yes, I did. Years ago, I used to work there, and it was so funny because people would come in with buckets and buckets of quarters, milk jugs, water jugs. People would get coins out of water fountains, everything else, and dump it into the machines.
Yeah.
As employees, we had to go in there. When it would get stuck, we would find nuts, bolts, nails. The machine would get wet from wet coins, and we would have to go in there and pull everything out and try and reset everything. But we would have people who would come in and complain if it was one penny off.
Seriously.
What they thought the amount should
Mike,
have.
So when I would use the machines, I would, as with Preston, you assume it's going to be off a little bit.
Yeah.
But that's your surcharge.
Yeah, that's it. So, okay, it won't be 100% accurate. If you got me 95% accuracy, I'd be okay with that.
Correct.
But let me ask you, how often would the machines get mucked up? How often would you have to fix them?
At least two or three times an hour.
Two or three times an hour?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Anytime I've gone in with those large amounts, Steve, there's always a time where the machine like will seize up and you got to get a manager or somebody to help out.
It's such a great sound. The clink, 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 clink.
Oh, I do love that.
Yeah, it's like you're in a casino, but you know you're going to win.
Yeah.
And the worst part is like, yeah, she would get kids that would come in, but they would drop coins in with bubble gum on it. And all that stuff would get mucked up in the machinery. So, yes, it would give an off count because it would not be able to count things accurately because things were getting stuck.
Know this. Where is there a public facility you can bring your change to have it redeemed for cash?
Well, I mean,
besides a bank.
Well, yeah, the supermarket. My Acme.
You couldn't bring it to the Treasury, for example, right?
Oh.
Unfortunately, banks will not accept loose coins anymore. They will tell you that you need to have them rolled up. TD Bank was one of the only banks that would allow customers and non-customers come in with a bucket of coins and be able to dump it in. And if you were a customer, you did not get the surcharge. If you were a customer, it was a free service.
So what's the best? This used to be all the rage. It'd be something that people would get all the time for Christmas. You know, those home coin counting machines.
We got one of those. Carter wanted one of those, and we used it once. It's another thing.
Me and my four-year-old daughter just did the coin little jar from Sharper Image, and we sat there for about 3 hours putting in about $8 worth of coins one by one.
F that.
Is there a machine that you can not only just coin counting, but it would actually put it into the little coin slips?
The coin counter machines would do it. The home units.
You put the little rolls underneath in these little tubes, and then you turn the crank, and it'll sift through and send them into the proper.
And then you have ice cream.
And they have ice cream.
I like ice cream.
All right, thank you.
You do.
Thank you, Mike.
Can you convert this to ice cream?
By the way, there's
a simple-minded fellow out there who thinks we can convert this to ice cream.
TD Bank has the best pens.
Do they? Right.
Yes.
Okay.
Cool. They do.
Thank you, Kathy.
You know what? These pens are awesome.
I'm telling you, you have great pens, guys. I'm telling you, I had to go to Citizens yesterday, and I was like, man, should have opened the account at TD Bank. I could have grabbed one of those pens.
That's right.
I'm not kidding you. It went through my head.
Do you want a Casey Boy pen? I had a whole bunch of Casey Boy.
I don't have one of those.
You have
over
Casey
here.
Boy pens?
He does.
It's his greeting card.
Instead of
his business card.
My greeting card. Happy birthday. No, I instead of doing a business card, I decided to have pens printed up because people throw away business cards and they don't throw away pens. And they lose pens.
Have you been handing them out, or are they just
into a quarantine and haven't really had an opportunity to.
Right, well, it's a great idea, though.
I needed a good pen.
You know what you need? Go to my local bank has a pen counting machine, which is great.
And it's ergonomically designed, too. It's got a little slenderness in the middle.
Notice the colors.
Green and silver. Like
Philadelphia Eagles.
What if you did Cowboys blue?
Oh, my God.
Oops. Marissa.
I actually don't like the TD Bank pens,
what?
But Univest has the pens.
No wonder Kathy hates you. Kathy,
how could you not like TD Bank's pens?
They're a little too big for me.
Well, give me all your TD Bank pens.
But Univest has ones like Casey, and I dare you to go to First Trust because they have actually nice pens that have a stylus on them.
Oh.
So it's a multi functional pen.
They have a stylus on them?
Yes.
Wow. No, so, she said stylist.
She did say that. Didn't she?
So is it a hairstylist or?
Yeah. Angela actually comes with every pen.
Kathy, I think.
You have a TD Bank pen?
I think I might have it.
Preston just picked up his pen caddy.
In my briefcase here, and I think it doesn't work anymore. I was so upset. No. I pulled it out. I'm like, I'm pulling out my special pen. And hang on, let me see. You know what? I might have thrown it away. No, I saved it. Hang on.
You have it?
No, it is a Coldwell Bank.
Look at that beauty.
And it wrote so smoothly, but I haven't used it in ages. Wait, it's writing again.
I'm doing it.
It's kind of half-assed working, though. That sucks.
Man.
All right, well, anyhow.
Whatever happened with Jackie Bam Bam and all the pens that he chose?
Oh, well, I don't know. They're still there.
Okay. Yeah.
I took a picture of one that he just completely obliterated a few months ago. This is before the pandemic.
You know what we need to do? We need to get metal pens that look like they're plastic.
Yeah.
And have him crack his teeth
in the studio. Maybe we'll train him to stop chewing on the pens.
He wouldn't be able to chew on the TD Bank pen.
Is it metal?
It's hard plastic. It's hard plastic, but it doesn't have that lid where he's chewing off. Wait, does he still hide them?
Yeah, because he's the only one that he can actually see it.
And he denies it's him, right?
He did for the longest time. He's like, it's not me. Oh, yes, it is. It is you. Like, why?
It continues.
Okay.
Hey, I want to go to this call because Barry works on the Franklin Mint Project.
All right.
So let's double back to that for a second. Hi. Good morning, Barry.
Hi. Am I on the radio?
Yes.
Sweet.
Excellent. What's up, man?
So I'm the civil engineer on the Franklin Mint Redevelopment Project. Tons of stuff going on there. One is the SEPTA. They're doing a new train station.
Yes.
So that's really?
That's extending the Media Elwin line.
Wow.
To Middletown Township.
Wow. Okay.
So that's the first one. And then right next to that is residential development. They just opened that up. That's all now for sale. And like some of those streets in that residential development, we named them after, like, figures of the Franklin Mint.
Oh, cool.
Remember that big medallion on the museum?
Yes.
The big circular building?
Yep. That was the museum part, yeah.
Yeah, so we saved that medallion. It'll be used in the development somewhere. And then we took that guy's name. And so he was the original engraver of the JFK half dollar.
Yeah.
Back in the 60s.
Okay.
So, like, we named some of the streets after him and Kennedy and all this other stuff.
Hey, Barry, as a civil engineer, is there anything that you can do about that traffic buildup that happens going southbound on Route 1? I mean, honestly, around 4 o'clock in the afternoon, it backs up from 452 all the way past the Y, and it gets really, really bad. And I know that when they were talking about doing what you guys are doing now, people were against it because it was going to make traffic worse. Are you guys addressing that issue at all?
Yeah, so I think you're talking northbound, like towards Philadelphia.
Yeah, you're heading northbound, but the traffic goes back up
ways.
Southbound.
Yeah, so part of the redevelopment is going to have a like a separate collector road where you can jump off of Baltimore Pike Route 1 to make your way to 452 to so that you don't have to wait in that traffic lane.
Okay. Because it's bad. I mean, it's really, really bad. And I would It's not like I was a big-time gym goer to begin with, but I would definitely avoid going to the Rocky Run Y and in and around those times.
Because you didn't
want to. No, because I didn't want to.
But what do you mean northbound traffic backs up southbound?
All right, so you're heading northbound, right?
Yeah.
So,
but you're sitting backwards in the car. But
no, the traffic extends.
Extends
south.
Backwards.
You're headed north, but
you don't have to say that, though.
Back. Yeah, I know.
Yeah, I know. But okay. I did. I said it that way, and right. I just said it.
Thank you, Barry.
Thanks.
All right, we'll talk to you later. All right, well, anyhow, the main focus of this conversation was the fact that they're running out of change. There's not much pocket change, and they're having to ration it. The Federal Reserve is monitoring it closely. The U.S. Mint produced fewer coins than usual this spring in an effort to protect employees from infection. And a larger problem, as with many pandemic shortages, is the distribution. So a lot of people are hanging on to their coins. And they need you, like the caller said earlier, you need to go and you got to get those out into circulation if you can.
You know what I got at the beginning of all this stuff? I got one of those UV little containers where you put your change and your money and your credit cards and your keys and all that stuff in there. And it bombards it with the supposedly disinfecting light.
Yeah.
So, yeah. So, but the thing is, I always have cash on me.
Yeah, me
and
too.
I've gone now weeks without having actual cash.
I have it in my wallet that hasn't moved in 3 months.
Right, right.
The same cash.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
How much?
$1,000.
$1,000.
Like 40 bucks?
Yeah, somewhere in there. Yeah. I've got like, $52.
I went to Produce Junction not that long ago, and they only take cash, so I was forced to use some of the, but I'm the same, Preston, like 3 months, the same amount of money.
Yep. You still owe me $100, do you not? Did we make a bet like a year or two ago?
We did. No, I think I thought I paid that up. It was a Michael Jackson thing, right?
What was the bet?
That he was all man.
No.
And I won?
It had to do with a song. And I was like, I bet you $100 right now.
Yeah.
I thought I paid up on that. Okay. Mm. All right.
Well, that's why you should never bet money, because you don't know if you actually paid up or you can't.
Bet livestock.
That's a way to do it. I definitely have a cow in my backyard.
Quick story about somebody who owes someone in a bet. Jace owes Matt Cord $50.
Whoa.
Your son owes, how did that happen?
Right.
How old is Jace again?
He's 8.
Okay.
So he bet Matt Cord. They were on the beach together, and he bet Matt Cord that he couldn't score a goal on him. Jace has a goalie net and a soccer ball on the
beach.
And
did $50 fly out of his mouth? Was that his idea?
It was Jace's idea. I'll bet you $50. Matt got the goal, so Jace owes Matt $50.
Wow. Can you imagine an 8-year goal and I'll bet you $50?
And then Jace goes, well, we didn't shake on it.
No. He's a Welcher.
He's a Welcher. Ready.
Not cool.
Man. All right. Listen, we need to take a break. We got some bizarre file stories. We will get to those when we return. Make sure you stay with us.
93.3 WMMR presents Jackson's Local Shots Artist of the Month, Biker Daughter. Celebrating our area's best talent, bringing it to you on air, online, and in the community. Hear and see more at WMMR.com, keyword Local Shots. Biker Daughter, Jackson's Local Shots Artist of the Month, sponsored by Family and Company Jewelers. Find a band that rocks her world at Family. 93.3 WMMR, everything that rocks.
All right, let's do the B-File.
Now, Bizarre. WMMR presents Bizarre. Kristen and Steve's Bizarre File.
We're going to start in Thailand. Residents are hiding behind barricaded indoors as rival monkey gang fights.
Oh.
Create no-go zones for humans.
Well, they're stealing a lot of monkeys. I know there's this movie on Netflix.
It's called Monkey Heist.
Monkey Heist.
Mm-hmm. The ancient Thai city has been overrun by a growing population of monkeys, supercharged on junk food.
Oh, my God.
As locals try to placate the macaques with snacks.
Our demands are simple. We want snacks. Lots of snacks.
The monkeys
usually... I, in particular, would appreciate trail mix, as I like sweet and savory.
The monkeys usually enjoy a steady supply of bananas from tourists who have dwindled amid the pandemic. Pointing out to the overhead netting covering her terrace, a resident said, "We live in a cage, but the monkeys live outside. their excitement.
Not so funny anymore, is it?
She said there's excitement everywhere. The smell is unbearable, especially when it rains.
Excrement.
The fearless primate's antics were largely tolerated as a major lure for the tourist hordes who descended on the city before the coronavirus outbreak to feed and take pictures of selfies with the animals. So a government sterilization campaign is now being waged against the creatures after an epidemic provoked an unexpected change in their behavior.
So they're sterilizing the monkeys?
Yes, they're trying to do that. So, but listen, as foreign tourism, which is Thailand's cash cow, seized up, so did the flow of free bananas tossed their way, prodding the macaques to turn to violence.
That makes sense. Footage. If they could train these monkeys to roll coins, Preston, we could solve two problems.
Footage of hundreds of them brawling over food in the streets went viral on social media in March, and their growing numbers doubling in 3 years to 6,000 and made an uneasy coexistence with their human peers almost intolerable. An abandoned cinema is the macaques' headquarters. Steve, they have a headquarters.
Oh, my God.
Nearby, a shop owner displays a stuffed tiger and crocodile toys to try and scare off the monkeys.
Tonight we're showing Planet of the Apes as an instructional. I hope you all attend. My name is Caesar.
Who regularly snatch spray paint cans from his store, by the way.
I
guess they're huffing. I don't know.
Yeah, honestly, Preston, Planet of the Apes.
Yeah, it's turning
into right
that.
There.
Mm-hmm. Officials have told people not to panic after a city less than 60 miles from Chernobyl was covered in a giant mushroom-shaped cloud.
Why would you panic?
Concerns were raised over the huge cloud was spotted in the capital, Kiev. Some locals speculate that Russian President Vladimir Putin may have been testing nuclear weapons, while others feared it could be a UFO. Dramatic images show the startling cloud and blue skies over Kiev. And the Ukrainian State Emergency Service later shared photos with the caption, "Admit it, who got scared?" According to the officials, there was no reason to panic, as the unusual cloud is a rare phenomenon known as an anvil cloud, so there was no reason for any worries.
It's quite funny, yes. You see the video on the Russia's funniest home videos.
They added, "We have had these types of clouds before above Kiev, Oblast, Ternopil, and Oblast and Vinnytsia." An anvil cloud, by the way, also called a cumulonimbus incus, is a cumulonimbus cloud which has reached a stratospheric stability and has formed the characteristic flat anvil top shape.
I've seen them.
Yeah, me too.
Yeah, and they do look mushroom cloudish.
And they don't move. They typically do not move, right, no matter how strong the wind is, and later slowly disappear. It often signifies an oncoming thunderstorm, but it happened over there and kind of freaked them out a little bit.
One day, Preston, we should, when everything's passed and you can do a little bit more traveling freely, we need to do our show from Pripyat.
Let's go. A man whose driver's license was suspended for the next 56 years is again charged with driving with a suspended license.
Oh, my God.
Police say they stopped Robert Albro Jr. in February. His license expired in 1997, and he has 8 suspension convictions. His driver's license is suspended until 2076.
And yet you hear these suspensions, the revocation of license, it doesn't matter for some people.
Yep. So last week he was waived a preliminary hearing on the latest charges. Police are investigating after an Amazon delivery driver was caught on camera throwing packages down into a sewer in Maryland. Officers were called Sunday after a neighbor called 911 to say an Amazon driver was dropping packages into the sewer.
In his defense, they were addressed to Pennywise.
When they arrived, they found the driver and the truck. And the driver, who was a temporary worker, told police he wanted to leave and started dumping the packages.
Oh, my God.
Police interviewed him and no arrests were made. And in a statement Monday evening, Amazon said it was aware of the incident and the case is under investigation.
Remember that story you had about the mailman who just kept the mail at home?
Oh, yeah.
That wouldn't just it bags happens. And bags of mail?
Happens every now and then, yeah. A British man arrested in a Brussels airport with cocaine inside an artificial penis could face up to 3 years in prison for the offense. The man was busted trying to smuggle the drugs from Jamaica into Belgium. He allegedly told investigators that he intended to use the cocaine for personal use once he returned home. Prosecutors did not provide the man who said he got the drugs, or they did not prove the man who said he got the drugs visiting his home in the Caribbean country was a mule, but still asked for a 36-month sentence. Now, what I don't understand is whether it was, you know, a penis attached to his groin or not.
Over. Yeah, right. I want to know what the configuration was, what the apparatus looked like.
Yeah, or if it was just a, you know, a sex toy.
But, right.
Defense attorneys argued such a sentence is too severe since the man is in poor health.
Well, they caught him freebasing his penis, and that was the tip-off.
He's set to be sentenced next Wednesday. One last story. In Smithtown, New Jersey, they recently enlisted the help of a professional tree climber to rescue a cat that was stranded for 3 days on a high branch of a tall tree. The cat named Tiger went missing from his home in the Nesconset area last week and was spotted by a neighbor up in the tree more than 50 feet off the ground. When officials realized the cat wouldn't be able to come down on its own, they tried to use a bucket lift, and that didn't work. They were unable to get high enough, so the fire department couldn't even get up there using their ladders. But a man named Omar, who works as a tree climber for Impressive Properties, ended up wearing a helmet and harness, climbed the tree, and brought Tiger back down to safety.
I bet he got sliced to ribbons.
The cat got a checkup from the animal control and then was reunited with his family. But that's 50 feet up in a tree, man, that's pretty tricky. And that is what we have in the Bizarre File.
Nice.
Let's take a break and come back in just a moment. Make sure you stay with us on this Thursday morning.
Love MMR? Buy some gear. Check out the Rock Shop at WMMR.com. Snazzy.
Say goodbye to juggling paper coupons and missing out on the best deals. Download the Acme mobile app today to have your own personal grocery guru right in your pocket. Use it to plan your shopping list like a pro. Get personalized deals on the products you buy most and choose your shopping style. Whether it's in-store, delivery, or drive-up, where an experienced Acme associate will carefully select, bag your order, even pick up your prescriptions from the pharmacy, and bring it all right to your car. Acme. Fresh foods, local flavors. Say goodbye to juggling paper coupons and missing out on the best deals. Download the Acme mobile app today to have your own personal grocery guru right in your pocket. Use it to plan your shopping list like a pro. Get personalized deals on the products you buy most and choose your shopping style. Whether it's in-store, delivery, or drive-up, where an experienced Acme associate will carefully select, bag your order, even pick up your prescriptions from the pharmacy and bring it all right to your car. Acme. Fresh foods, local flavors.
Back with more of the Preston and Steve Show podcast.
We're going to have Brian Boucher, formerly Philadelphia Flyers, on the program around 9 o'clock. There's a special showing of 2000s playoffs against the Pittsburgh Penguins. Game 3 went 8 periods. It was 5 overtime, so they're replaying that, which should be pretty interesting. So we'll talk to Boucher in a little bit. But I know you don't... So when researching topics to talk about on the program, sometimes I find ones that thread together, and they have led to
characters or
certain,
what would you call them? Subcategories or?
Yes.
But segments.
What's the word I was looking for? an alias, but,
pseudonym.
Something like that. Yeah.
Right. Yeah.
A thesaurus.
Yeah. A thesaurus.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, which is a large beast that roamed the earth many years ago.
Yes. We all know
yeah.
this. No, I can't think of the word. But anyhow, there's a new character. And Steve actually came up with the name of this. Ladies and gentlemen, I am now bringing you the Space Cowboy.
I'm a Space Cowboy.
I have found.
Get you
a few stories that have to do with space and space exploration.
From the far reaches of the universe, he comes to you with information about all that surrounds us. The Space Cowboy.
Right. There actually has been a lot of stuff about space and celestial goings-on in the news.
Yes, there have.
And you're here to report.
Actually, I have a better theme. This will be it. There you go. This is more
so majestic.
This is
so majestic.
All right, so yes, Space Cowboy. I have some stories for you concerning space travel,
and it's good stuff.
It is. So there is. Hang on, I gotta hear this one more time. I love.
love that.
So a new startup called Space Perspective wants to take your money and send you toward the stars, but not in a rocket.
No.
Not like SpaceX is doing or Virgin Galactic or any of that stuff.
A circus cannon.
No, a balloon.
So, yeah, this is... This can be interesting.
Done. It can be done. Or at least to the edge of space.
Right. You know, they've talked about things like that, like a basically like a space elevator. And and the space balloon has been something that's been talked about for a while.
Yeah. I mean, they send, you know, these weather balloons up to the edge of the atmosphere.
Yeah, yeah.
Pretty often.
We've done it successfully a number of times.
Many times.
It's, yeah. And in fact, it got so passe and boring that we stopped doing it because our success rate was almost becoming embarrassing.
But
we never actually even cleared media.
It's designed to be an alternative to the rocket-based space tourism industry. The company called Spaceship, or their product called Spaceship Neptune, the capsule, will be packed with paying customers and then carried aloft to a height of approximately 100,000 feet.
Would you?
It's,
because you'd voiced your, you would not do the Virgin Galactic.
Yeah, probably not. I think with a balloon, there is less of a chance of catastrophe. It's the liftoff and the ignition of those rockets. The engines.
You have issues with sitting on a building filled with dynamite.
Yeah, there's a little more danger involved. Now, I would assume that the way this works is it goes, you know, the balloon takes you up, and then it will, they'll use parachutes to bring you back down. That's my guess.
We hope that's it.
Or they slowly de-inflate. I don't know how you do this, because the balloons expand the higher you go.
Right.
And they eventually will explode.
So what I would imagine is that, yes, that would have to be the case.
Imagine they would release it, and then you would free fall for a little while, and then they would have chutes, and then it would be a water landing.
I don't imagine you're going to will you get to the point where you experience zero G?
No. It's not going that high.
Right.
You have to be in...
Outside the...
you have to be in low Earth orbit.
Orbit, and you're not getting there.
No. You're just going up really, really high to the edge of space and then coming back down. So, yeah, I think it would, but I'll give you the price tag here in a moment.
So, when you reported on this story, Preston, I pulled it up, and I had a feeling of nervousness in the pit of my stomach, and I couldn't figure out why exactly. And then I remembered I watched a movie last year called The Aeronauts with Felicity Jones from Rogue One. Anybody else see this?
No. I heard about it. It didn't get very good reviews.
Well, I found it really good.
Oh,
so,
yeah?
Reviews be damned or whatever, but my palms were sweating the entire time I was watching it. It was about ballooning in England in the 1800s.
Okay.
And some things go wrong.
Yeah.
And so people are... It's when a balloon experiment does not work well, and they, like, the hurtling back towards Earth, part of it scared the crap out of me.
Okay.
All right, so with this, you go up to space. Let's say everything goes off as without a hitch. You go up to space, you see the curvature of the Earth and all that fun stuff.
Right.
Where do you come down? Wherever?
Well, right on your front lawn, from what I understand.
Well, yeah, it's going to be... So let me continue with the story of this. So they take it up to about 100,000 feet. It's one of several entries into the burgeoning space tourism industry, but whether they can pull it off is everybody's guess right now. Now, according to the company, the trip to space, technically the edge of space, will be relatively brief. 2 hours will be spent ascending to the intended altitude, and then another 2 hours will be spent returning to Earth. So I guess you don't free fall, because I can't imagine that would take 2 hours to come back down.
So, okay, do they explain the mechanism by which you return to space if you are indeed in a...
To Earth.
I mean, to Earth, if you're indeed in a balloon.
No, a window of 2 hours in between ascent and descent will offer travelers some truly breathtaking views of their home planet. When the trip is over, the capsule will come to rest in the Atlantic Ocean, and passengers will be picked up by a ship of some kind and then brought back to shore.
And you get to take a picture with Barney the dinosaur, right?
Of course you do. Yes. So that's how they were. Yeah, it would be a water landing case. They would be monitoring where you are, and they would have ships in the area,
almost,
I would assume.
Preston, almost like the way you when you take a normal, regular balloon ride. You know, like if you go out to Lancaster, it's the same thing. They sort of follow you. They know a point. They're going to obviously set you in some body of water that they're familiar with, and they can trace you and get out to you. But... it's basically the same concept, just on a larger scale.
Some of it would be a crapshoot as to where you're gonna land, by the way. So, but it will cost you $125,000 per person.
$125,000.
That's all.
125 grand. If you're going to spend that much, I'd rather do the Virgin Atlantic. Mm-hmm. I'd rather get zero G's.
But what is the Virgin Atlantic going to
cost? I think that's 225,000.
Is that it?
I think so. Nick, can you do a check on that?
Yeah, because I thought it was like
that's economy, though.
To $1 million. So
you don't get to pick your seat.
They don't technically have a blast off. The balloons would be deployed from Kennedy Space Center, but they're still trying to work out the details of finding their way through the FAA's red tape.
There's a point at which you become, you know, where the altitude is just. There's a difference between like hanging out of a plane that's flying. If you're going to do a parachute jump or something, I've never done it, but I know you have. At this point, you're so excessively high altitude that fear, that vertigo, I don't think would hit you, right?
I don't know. I mean, it's yeah. How do you feel when you're on an aircraft? I mean,
yeah.
You know, I mean, when you're flying in a plane, do you get that?
No, not
sensation?
At all. No,
so probably not. $250,000, yeah, for the for the Atlantic Virgin Galactic.
So for an extra $100,000, Preston.
Yeah.
I mean, come on.
You can go all the way.
Tack it on.
Yeah. All right, so that is something that they are working on. So we'll see. What else do I have?
Some people call me the space cowboy.
All right, so
we're trying to package this crap in any way possible.
It's what we
but
do.
But this, I like space. I know Kathy's riveted.
Yeah. I recorded this cowboy years ago.
Space.
Oh, my God.
Space. Space. Space.
What's that edit in there?
Yeah, that's a terrible edit.
That's a bad
edit. Yeah. Sound like an intern did that.
Well, it's like you're in space and trying to edit.
Oh.
Yeah, he wanted to replicate what it'd be like to be in zero G's and have to edit.
Now I get it. NASA has unveiled the name of the asteroid that will be the focus of its upcoming planetary defense mission. The asteroid's name was selected in preparation for a potentially Earth-saving mission. In 2003, astronomers came across an asteroid with an orbiting moon of its own. And due to its nature, the binary system was named Didymos.
Didymos?
Which is spelled D-I-D-Y-M-O-S. I'm assuming that's how you pronounce
it. As in P. Didymos?
Didymos. Didymos, maybe. I don't know.
Yeah.
Which is Greek for twin, by the way.
Oh.
Okay.
Well, that makes sense then.
Didymos became the name of the main asteroid in the system, while its orbiting moon became officially known as Didymos B. Didymos is a near-Earth asteroid system, which means it occasionally flies close to the Earth as it travels around the sun. And due to this, it was selected as the target of a new mission organized by NASA.
So is this having to do with learning how to deflect asteroids?
Exactly.
Okay, we need a practical test of this.
Yes, dubbed as the Double Asteroid Redirection Test, or DART. The objective of the mission is to deflect an approaching asteroid by hitting it with a spacecraft. And through the mission, NASA plans to study the possibility of saving Earth from an impact event caused by an approaching asteroid.
Okay, now fly into it.
What?
Yeah, right. Fly into it. I'm sorry. I don't know if we're hearing you correctly. You want us to fly into it? Couldn't we fire missiles at it?
They didn't talk to them.
Sure,
that.
But that's not this mission, so fly into it.
Yeah.
Oh, I just hope this doesn't go bad. And it actually sort
directs
of
it towards Earth.
I was saying like about a, the same
like,
thing.
Like a bad chip shot.
Yeah. Yep. Oh, they knocked it the wrong way.
Too much English on that asteroid. Yep.
Mm-hmm. NASA selected Didymos B as the main target of the mission, which is scheduled to launch sometime in 2022.
A funny thing has happened, ladies and gentlemen. We did not intend for this. But if you have any relatives in Ohio.
In preparation for the mission, the space rock was given an official name. So now they've renamed it.
All right.
So it is now called Dimorphos.
Dimorphos.
That sounds pretty cool. That sounds better than Didymos.
My name is Dimorphos.
Dimorphos. Voiced by Morgan Freeman.
I am a celestial body known as Dimorphos.
Although choosing a name sounds like a simple task, it actually took an international collaboration to formulate Dimorphos's official designation.
Is this an international collaboration in the whole process of deflecting the asteroid?
Yes.
It is a world problem.
Yes, it is. I believe so. And so the name of Didymos, the main asteroid, was given after astronomers from different observatories around the world were able to confirm its trajectory. Then, after it was decided that its moon will be the target of DART, of the DART mission, the projects had worked with other astronomers to come up with an official name for Didymos B, and eventually the name Dimorphos was suggested by planetary scientist Cleomenes Sigonis.
Oh, my God.
Who is also a member of the DART team.
Well, what about Lil Za? and Lil Yachty? They should use hip-hop names. A little Pump.
You're right.
That'd be cool.
Yeah.
Tekashi Didymos.
Dimorphos, which means two forms, reflects the status of this object as the first celestial body to have the form of its orbit significantly changed by humanity.
All right.
In this case, by the DART impact.
A projected date for this?
2022 is when they're going to start... they're scheduled to launch the mission in 2022 at some point.
All right, and so
and Steve, I don't know because there are various concepts they have about.
So there's a couple on the plate. So it's the suicide team that flies into it.
They're probably going to put that one on hold. Right. It's either crash something into it, and then they've also flirted with like
talking to it.
No, like solar sails and things like that.
The solar sails, yeah, yeah. I mean, the idea of redirecting with nuclear weapon. I know that all that stuff. I think they're trying to just gently massage the orbit path.
Yeah. So a listener pointed this out that this is the double asteroid redirection test. If there was a first asteroid redirection test, that'd be the fart.
Oh,
and then the single hit. Version would be the shart.
Yes.
You know? Like, why didn't they consult us?
I know.
We should be in on this stuff.
Our listeners really have valuable information.
They do.
We are the space cowboys.
So. It's pretty cool. There's an animation they're showing here of the some sort of impact on this asteroid. Is this something that that freaks any of you out? I mean, I know.
I rewatched Deep Impact. Double Impact with Double Impact with Jean-Claude Van Damme is not nearly as interested in space.
I'm caging.
No, I watched Deep Impact with my son 2 or 3 weeks ago, and
it's a good movie.
But it came out the same year as Armageddon, so it was kind of overshadowed by that in the box office and whatever. But the concept of all of that. Sending people into space, you know, that movie came out 22 years ago. I'm sure the ability to do these types of things is really, they've been advanced, you know, and spotting them before they become a danger has grown leaps and bounds as well.
Thanks also in part to the Hubble.
Yeah, true. Marissa says I should maybe use this as a segue between stories for the Space Cowboy.
I like it.
All right.
That's pretty good.
Yeah. Listen, we're trying. We're finding, just as they're finding ways to divert these asteroids, we're finding out how to frame this segment.
Mm-hmm. All right. I only have one other Space Cowboy story, by the way.
No more segues after this?
At the end, I could probably do a Space Cowboy. I kind of like it.
Some people call me the Space Cowboy.
So... when Earth was still a molten mass with a surface swimming in liquid magma, Pluto, along with its icy underground ocean, were just forming. And the billions of years since, liquid Plutonian water has remained in the distant solar system, providing a potential abode for life. At least that's the conclusion of a new study published in the journal Nature Geoscience. So they believe...
there's the potential for life on the planetoid Pluto.
No, not that. But there is a history of... the early history of Pluto suggests that other liquid oceans, once thought to be unique to Earth, are common on dwarf planets across the outer solar system. They think that there might be liquid underneath the surface of Pluto as well.
And they've said a couple of the other planets. They believe that might be the case on Europa, the moon of Jupiter.
So according to Alan Stern, an astronomer at the Southwest Research Institute and head of NASA's New Horizons mission, the oceans are ubiquitous. Most of them are in the outer layer solar system, and they could be abodes for life. This is a fundamental sea change in the way that we view the solar system. When the New Horizons spacecraft made its flyby of Pluto in 2015, it revealed a surface geology so active and complex that scientists suspected there may have once been an ocean buried miles beneath Pluto's thick crust of ice.
Isn't that cool?
Those suspicions have grown closer to presumptions in recent years, and now most planetary scientists agree that even today, Pluto has a global liquid ocean under its surface.
This provides all sorts of new fishing opportunities.
Yes, it does. We haven't even thought about those applications.
Those campaigns in the summer, fish Pluto.
But how does a world smaller than the Earth's moon harbor an ocean? And how did it manage to keep it from freezing over the course of billions of years? With the new study, scientists think that they finally have an answer to these questions. Until now, they assumed that Pluto was formed out of cold material glomming together very slowly.
Glomming?
Yes.
like globs of cops.
As a dusty disk of debris coalesces around our sun, the dwarf planet would have gradually clumped together out of bits of rock and ice. Once large enough, Pluto's internal heat would have melted some of its ice, creating a subsurface ocean. That story works well, as Pluto's underground ocean is explained simply by the decay of radioactive elements.
That's what I'm going with.
But the team wanted to test that theory. They wanted to find out whether Pluto started off as hot instead and formed through a series of massive impacts, much like early Earth. And as it turns out, there's a way to tell whether Pluto formed hot or cold by simply observing the dwarf planet's surface, and it relates to the straightforward fact that water expands as it freezes and compresses when it melts.
Okay.
And it goes on and on how to say that they think that it actually started off as hot.
And then they just admit at the end that they made it up.
They made it all up.
The movie that I saw, Preston, it's a found footage film. It's called Europa Report.
Okay.
And it's a mission to Europa, and they discover this ocean underneath Europa as... the people have suggested, scientists have suggested, and it doesn't go well. But it's found footage. I know you like those kind of movies.
I do. I was watching Apollo 18 the other day.
Yes.
Which I...
It's not great, but it's not bad.
No, it's interesting. I love the found footage format of filmmaking anyway, so I thought it was kind of cool. But, so who knows, man. I mean, this stuff... There are a lot of different theories that they come up with, and some of them move closer and closer to what they suspected. And every now and then you hear one that's like, no, wait, we were wrong.
Doesn't that help? I think that whenever this stuff is brought up, whenever Neil deGrasse Tyson or anybody, Derek Pitts or anybody brings up this stuff, it puts everything in context. I mean, to me, you look at everything that's going on. Look at all the stuff that we don't know, all the potential, the miraculous stuff.
I think we're going to have Derek on tomorrow, by the way.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, he's awesome. He's such a great guy. Sometimes when you have people like that on, or Neil deGrasse Tyson, Steve, you have to think of your questions so that you don't sound like too much of an idiot.
Yeah.
Well in advance. So if
what makes gum chewy?
Right.
What? I don't know.
But if you have any questions for Derek, think of them now, and maybe we can actually get him some good ones by tomorrow. Right.
By the way, this text wants to know, or they're taking a guess at what Kathy has purchased during this segment.
Well, here's the thing. I'm trying so desperately not to shop, but like, you guys are making it really hard.
I know. But listen, listen to this guess. This is what they think.
All right. Okay. All right.
This person thinks that during our space conversation that you bought a throw pillow with the phrase that says Cheerios without sugar is only okay with a cut up banana.
No,
in there.
No.
Okay.
Not even in the ballpark. Are there any more guesses?
No, this is the one person's very specific guess.
Very specific, yeah.
I would say that the go-to is usually shoes, but I don't think that's
no,
what it is.
No. We're past shoes.
I'm thinking something for the summer for Jace.
I was thinking, not for Jace, I was thinking of something of the summer for Kathy. I was thinking, a bathing suit, maybe.
No, Casey's closest.
Oh, something for Jace?
Something for the beach for Jace?
Oh, is it a hovercraft thing that you were looking at?
You're so, nope, we already got that.
Okay.
Something for hovercraft.
Hoverboard. Not a hovercraft.
Whatever. You know what I meant.
No, I didn't. I
clear the launch pad. Clear the launch pad.
Is it a kite?
Wait, well, and let's just be clear. I didn't purchase anything because I can't figure out my Target password.
Oh.
Oh, my God.
Hey, did you know that Pluto has an ocean on it?
What'd you get?
So I really have nothing. I didn't purchase anything.
But what were you looking at?
Trying to figure out my Target password.
Right, yeah, so what were you trying to buy?
Target.
sunscreen because you can't get it in store.
You can't get it in store?
Well, my Target was sold out. So
oh, really?
I'm ordering it online.
Here's a question. Would you need sunscreen were you to go to the ocean of Pluto?
Yes. Right. I think so.
Because it's so remote.
The sun, yeah.
I wonder what the UV saturation would be at that distance.
Mm-hmm. I have a question that maybe you can answer. And can dogs get sunburn?
I don't know. That is a good question.
Because my dog loves to lay
go
in
the tanning place?
No.
I think on their noses they can.
Okay.
Like, because it's sensitive and...
Are you guessing?
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, that's why I said I think at the beginning of that sentence.
Take a look. Do a quick Google search.
Yes, they can.
Dogs can get sunburn.
Yep. Like people, dogs exposed to too much sun can develop some skin cancers and things like that. And you'll see their skin will actually get a little bit pink or red.
Okay.
I love those dogs.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so Fozzie was looking all majestic and just laying in the
you
driveway
made love to him,
yesterday.
Didn't you?
I did not, okay. Steve.
What'd you say?
You made love to him, too.
Oh. He's big enough.
You could.
No, yeah. No, that's Reggie. Reggie.
Oh, Reggie's the larger one.
Fozzie, I would split in half.
Case and...
Jesus.
Oh, jeez.
Oh, my God.
Oh, why did I say that?
I sent you down that path, didn't I? And now you're thinking about banging your dog.
Connor's face in the room. He's like, oh, my God. Wow.
Yikes.
Okay.
God damn, that dog's looking good.
Oh, my God.
No, it's cute when they go out in sunlight.
Yeah.
Ours do that as well.
All right, real quick. So dogs with lighter colored fur are more likely to get sunburned.
And Fozzie's white, and he's got like pink skin.
That case, that's exactly what it says.
Okay.
You going to put sunscreen on him?
Do you want me to get you an extra bottle?
I would love to see that.
Do they have dogs? Get a huge one of those... hats, those huge, what, a panorama, what do they call them? Panama
parasol?
No, the Panama jacket.
Yeah, yeah. Panama hat.
Casey has one.
I have one.
I hate that hat, by the way.
Do you really? Oh, my God, I love it so much.
Your Panama hat?
Yeah, it's like a big, giant straw hat.
It's so
That's
much.
Not
yeah.
a Panama hat. But that's, I know what you're talking about, those huge hats.
Yeah. Doggy Sun Mist is available at Chewy.com.
Shut up!
Petkin SPF 15 Doggy Sun Mist 4-ounce bottle for $8.80.
What is the classic hat and the one of the guys who occasionally comes over and does gardening, you know, when we're doing stuff like mulch, he'll wear a hat. And these guys are awesome. He wears like, it's almost like a, I guess... What you might see someone who's working in a rice paddy or...
Yeah, I know what you're talking
about. It's a sort of a conical hat.
It like hangs over, right?
Yeah, it's almost like a cone, right?
It's almost like a cone, okay. Yeah. And they seem to be really...
Like a bamboo hat?
Nick, do you have a picture of it?
Asian conical hat, bamboo hat, Vietnamese bamboo leaf conical hat.
Best for dogs.
So, Kat, that's the hat... All right, so my hat doesn't look like that, but it is straw and big like that. And that's the one that you don't like?
Show that to Casey. Preston, look at this. This woman's wearing an
this
awning.
This is my purchase.
Yeah. You actually bought that?
No, I didn't. Yeah, I should.
It's really, it's almost like a gigantic disc with a little cap.
Yeah, it's like an umbrella. It goes over your shoulders and everything.
My my neighbor wears one of those conical hats when he's out working in the
It seems to be really
yard.
Good.
It's very, very functional. I mean, mm-hmm. you're going to get a lot of shade from that. So
that's why I wear it. It just creates a lot of shade. And I only wear it down on the beach.
You have a hat that looks like that?
What? No. Here, I'll show you a picture.
I saw it. Were you on your scooter with it when we did the Hunters commercial?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay.
I like it, that hat. But I
you
just,
wear it for functionality for the show.
Yeah, it's not like I'm trying to...
Pick up chicks. Pick up
or,
dogs.
Stop it! Steve! I wear it because it's safe, and okay. I'm in the sun quite often.
All right. One other thing from the Space Cowboy.
Going back to space.
Yeah.
People call me the Space Cowboy.
Not really. This is on Earth. But
Earth is in space.
It has connections to celestial events. Stonehenge.
Yes.
Of course, which is a calendar of sorts, follows the solstice and equinoxes.
I've been. It's fascinating.
Well, a team of archaeologists have discovered a major new prehistoric monument just a short distance away from Stonehenge. Fieldwork and analysis have revealed evidence of 20 or more massive prehistoric shafts.
Yeah.
More than 10 meters in diameter and 5 meters deep, forming a...
Shut your mouth.
No, not that shaft.
Just talking about shafts.
Forming a circle more than 2 kilometers in diameter around the Durrington Walls Henge. Coring, because there are more than one. There's more than one henge.
There are a number of henges.
So
there's Benson and henges.
That's hard to say. Benson and henges.
It's hard. Yeah.
Henges instead of hedges. So coring of the shaft suggests the features are Neolithic and excavated more than 4,500 years ago.
Are you fascinated by this stuff?
I am.
And what, again, just Stonehenge alone has the amount of research and the amount, it is essentially a celestial calendar.
When we were in Sweden, we went to, you know, the Viking village, and they have these ancient rune stones.
Yes.
And they're large, you know, about the size of a human being, and, it's fascinating to me. You know, they had etchings on them and things like that, and I find that stuff really, really cool.
You know what else is near Stonehenge and these shafts?
What?
Robin Hood's ball. I'm not kidding. I don't know. It's another site. It's right up here.
Okay.
There's the Lesser Cursus, the Greater Cursus, Stonehenge.
Are those all henges?
Yeah, Wilsford Shaft.
Robin Hood's ball.
And Robin Hood's ball.
And Lil John's butthole.
It's around the corner.
All right, so what is a henge? Does a henge mean like circle by any chance? Or
I don't know. But I know that Casey showed me a video that has to do with balls and buttholes.
Oh, my God, dude.
Okay.
Is it from England?
It might be.
I don't.
We can't describe it. I can't even go into
what. What technically is a henge then? If we're on that issue,
to Nick looked up
particular type of earthwork of the Neolithic period, consisting of a circular or oval shaped bank.
Okay. Huh. All right. So that's where you can bring your change if you have too much.
Yes.
So
at Stonehenge, we're ready for you with our open air style, and it's a cafe too.
It is thought that shafts served as a boundary to a sacred area or precinct associated with the henge.
Yeah.
Clearly sophisticated practices demonstrate that the people were so in tune with natural events to an extent that we can barely conceive in the modern world we live in today, according to a spokesperson there.
If you watch the shows on the History Channel and even things like Ancient Aliens, mm-hmm. Which I am a fan of, my wife even more so, you know, you think of Star Wars, you talk about it in a time long ago where they had this incredible understanding of things. There are a lot of things that amaze modern science and researchers about what they were able to achieve with levels of accuracy that imply,
you know. Maybe they had some assistance.
Right.
I don't know.
Or, you know, like we were discussing last week, there was a, like a superior intellectual, you know, human race here before the ancient Egyptians that were wiped out by some sort of celestial
foot fungus,
catastrophic event. And that
they couldn't walk anywhere.
Ow!
They just died.
Just build a henge here.
And that the pyramids that we know them weren't built by the ancient Egyptians, but dug out by the ancient Egyptians.
Yeah.
And they said that anything like modern today, like in America, like that if something were to happen, like a asteroid or something like that, were to come down and wipe us all out, the one thing that would maybe stay that's in the United States right now, do you guys know what it would be?
The one thing that would stay?
Yeah, the Fonzie statue?
No, like 12, 15, 20,000 years from now.
At the Goethals Bridge in New York?
No.
All right, so the one man-made object.
Mm-hmm.
That would withstand the impact of a direct hit from a an asteroid?
Yeah.
Nothing.
What did they say?
Mount Rushmore.
Oh, okay.
Oh, well, yeah, okay, that makes sense.
Yeah.
It'd probably get a little banged up.
I mean, if Mount Rushmore got hit by the no, I'm not talking about that. Like if that got directly hit by an asteroid. No, that would be
I would imagine a lot of things could handle that, depending on where the explosion, where the impact took place. Hershey Park could be fully intact for all we know.
That's right. Yeah, we lost Europe, but we got Hershey Park.
Everybody might die, but Hershey Park could still stand.
They would close the rides for a while.
Yeah.
So there's, if you go to the Grand Canyon and you tour and you go way, way, way down deep, they can basically, you know, it's like history, you know, through and the rocks.
Layers.
Yeah. And the layers and everything. But there's one section of the Grand Canyon where I forget what they call it, but they basically say during this time, either something very, very crazy cataclysmic happened or nothing happened.
Okay.
You know, like we're talking for like a billion years. So either
that's a lot of wiggle room.
It's a lot.
That's a scientist who wants to keep his job.
Yeah.
either something tremendous happened or nothing.
So they're kind of, perplexed as to what this particular layer represents.
Right.
Okay. So anyhow, this announcement about the about this henge that they found is comes after the summer solstice, which took place online this year. Dr. Nick Sensal hailed the astonishing discovery, saying that as the place where the builders of Stonehenge lived and feasted, Durrington Walls is key to unlocking the story of the wider Stonehenge landscape. And this astonishing discovery offers us new insights into the lives and beliefs of our Neolithic ancestors.
Right on.
How did they even know to start digging there?
Because they've been researching that area. There's all sorts of stuff connected to that area. If you ever get the chance to visit Stonehenge, you know, you go, oh, is this going to be something? You get there. First off, the one thing that does impress you is that it's a bit smaller than you assumed it was. Everything always seems bigger when you're looking at it in a TV special, whatever. That said, though, it's freaking Stonehenge.
Steve, it's like the floor is lava. Those objects are jumping around on them. Don't look that big.
Right.
Until people start jumping on
them. Exactly.
Yeah. I was actually supposed to watch the sunset in Stonehenge in April, and then this pandemic happened.
Great. Son of a bitch.
No.
You'll get there.
That's all that I have. I am the Space Cowboy. I'm sure we'll revisit this. And we're going to have Derek Pitts on tomorrow from the Franklin Institute. He is a wonderful interview.
We could have him flesh out some of this stuff.
Yeah.
And also recommend some sunscreen for Kathy.
He probably could.
All right, so we're going to take a break and come back in just a moment. Brian Boucher will be joining us. Stay with us.
Preston and Steve. On 93.3 WMMR.
Tonight on NBC Sports Philadelphia, they're going to replay game number 3. It was the Eastern Conference semifinals in 2000. The Flyers were playing the Penguins. And everybody's excited. I mean, it's playoff hockey. It's one of my favorite times of the year. It went for 8 periods. 5 overtime periods and a low scoring game too. It was a 2-1. So it was just a marathon game. And in fact, I'm going to play a clip. It was Keith Primo who scored the game winner.
Right.
And then they advanced, or they didn't advance, but they moved on to the next game, obviously. But here's a clip of that happening. Here we go.
McGillis ahead. Primo off the bench. He's onside. Primo moves deep with it. Stops the shot. He's got it.
Listen to JJ. Thank God it's over. Thank God Almighty it's over.
The Wells, and this baby goes back to Philly, even at 2 games apiece.
Unbelievable. Thank God this is over.
God. What a night. Unbelievable. Well, there was one guy in net that whole night. He's on the line. Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome Brian Boucher.
Yay!
Boosh, good morning.
Good morning, guys. How's everybody holding up?
We're holding up as fine as we can. And yourself?
Hanging in there. Miss hockey, I can tell you that. But doing as best as we can over here.
I hear you, man. By the way, hearing that clip that I just played, do you still do flashes of being exhausted come back to you after hearing that?
Yeah, they do. And maybe the one benefit of this whole pandemic and this isolation and lockdown is that we've been able to relive some moments of hockey past. And this is one moment that has been talked about a lot during this whole thing. So it's been really cool for me to relive that night. Although it's probably something that I never wanted to do again because it was awfully exhausting. It's nice to relive the stories and talk to guys about it, and you kind of forget some things, and it gets your mind going back to that night where it was an unforgettable night and part of hockey history.
Well, you know what, and that series in particular, because one thing I didn't realize until I read this article by Pat Boyle that came out a few years ago was that you guys had played a triple overtime game 2 days before that.
Well, game 3 was overtime. I don't know if it was triple OT, but I mean, it was an overtime game. There's no doubt. Game 3 was an overtime win. Andy Delmore got the winner to get us back into that series. And, and then we go 5 overtimes. Thank God we had 2 days in between game 4 and game 5. We ended up having an afternoon game for game 5. If we didn't have those 2 days off, I don't even know if that product of hockey would have been watchable, to be honest with you, because everybody was so exhausted.
Yeah, I remember it vividly. I remember you guys losing the first two in Philly and then going into Pittsburgh and taking the two there, including the five overtime game. With that game in particular, in game four, Brian, was it more physically exhausting or mentally exhausting? Because you have to maintain focus that whole time.
Yeah, I think it's both. I mean, at different times, you know, you feel it differently. I mean, I remember being mentally exhausted because it's, you know, the next mistake could cost it, right? Could cost the game. So you're, you know, mentally you're trying to stay in it, but it's hard to ignore the cramps. It's hard to ignore the physical exhaustion that you had. Adrenaline carried me through a lot of the night. I'm sure it carried a lot of the guys through the night. But I think at that moment when it ended, I said this before, I don't think I could have played another full period. That was about, you know, where I was at the point where this is enough. And I think in hearing some Pittsburgh Penguin guys talk, and it's great, they on this podcast, you know, this Marathon on Ice podcast that's out today, this morning, you hear the, you know, Ron Tugnutt and Bob Bugner from the Pittsburgh Penguins side talk about it and how they felt when it was over. I think they were just happy to get off the ice. Even though they lost, they're like, okay, we'll just get on to the next game.
Yeah.
It was an exhausting night for all of us.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think, you know, the Penguins losing was probably, It obviously it tied the series up, but if you guys would have lost, you guys would have been down 3-1, and that's a more formidable to come back from. I have a few friends in my life that are huge hockey fans. Nick is one of them, and Chuck D'Amico, who works down the hall, is another one, and he remembers this game like it was yesterday, and he recalled posits that Keith Primeau scored that goal because he was more rested than everybody else, and he's not exactly sure why Keith was off the ice. He was off the ice for an extended period of time. It was either an equipment issue or it might have been a slight injury or something like that, but he was more rested than any other skater out on the ice. Is that what you recall as well?
I don't recall that. I mean, I didn't focus on anybody but myself, truthfully, during that whole night. I mean, I had no idea what anybody else was doing. I know that Primo, the goal that the way he scored it, I feel like he tried that move a couple of times in this series where he came down the right side and tried to cut to the middle. And for whatever reason, the puck would, you know, jump over his stick or he wasn't able to execute the play. But I remember that play so clearly, and I remember the sound that it made when that puck hit the back bar in the net. It makes a clunk sound and not a ping. And I knew when I heard the clunk, I knew it was over. I mean, for all of the ways that you can score in overtime, oftentimes they're ugly goals, they're fluky goals. This was a heck of a play made by Primo. Whether it was in the first period or the eighth period, that was just a tremendous move that he put on Kasparaitis and was able to put it past Ron Tugnutt for the win. Unreal.
So you have played many, many minutes of hockey in your lifetime, and obviously a five-overtime, eight-period game is definitely going to stand out in your memory. But I'm sure you've forgotten more than you remember about hockey. What do you think it is about a particular play or a game or whatever that has to happen in order for you to remember it so vividly?
Well, hopefully it's a positive memory. You try to forget the negative ones, that's for sure. And truthfully, when I look back on my career, I for all the times that I know there were bad days when I played, I knew I had some bad games and bad moments, but those don't seem to come back to the front of my mind when I'm thinking about, memories that you played. But as time goes on, you do forget some of the finer details of stories. And like I said earlier, this pandemic has kind of forced us to watch old hockey games and go back in time and relive some moments. And I don't think this was a moment that as teammates of that 2000 team, we had a chance to really relive the way we have during this last 3 months. So I've talked about it a lot. It's brought up some funny stories. We had some real characters on that team, that 2000 team, guys like Craig Berube, Keith Jones, Rick Tocchet, some real funny guys. Chris Carey. I mean, like we laughed in that locker room more than any team that I ever played for. And that was my rookie year. And unfortunately for me, it was all downhill after that. My rookie year was my most memorable, and a lot of it is because of the guys that we had in that locker room, a real special group of veteran guys.
That's cool, man. When you can have fun at your job, even though you're working really, really hard, that's an absolute bonus. Hey, Brian, I had a question about being a goaltender in particular because, you know, you mentioned being able to hear Primo's shot hitting that back bar. When you let one get past you, obviously you're unhappy about that. But is it that much worse when they go upstairs and knock your water bottle off the back of the net?
Yeah, that's you hate to, for you do. You're right. You hate to get scored on, period. But when you have to go and pick up your water bottle that's been
that's insult to injury, right?
Yeah, exactly. It's like, come on, did you really have to do that? But it's funny. I talk to ex-goalies all the time, and you know, it's a funny story because we always hear this distinct sound whether the puck hits the white padding on the net, and even though there could be 19,000 fans in the building, as a goaltender, you hear the puck hit that pad.
That's wild.
It's a bad feeling. It's this feeling that you're like, oh man.
Yep.
And you know, but we've all had the experience, and I tell you what, I don't miss having those goals go in, but I sure do miss playing the game, and I miss the celebration with the guys and the laughter in the locker room. But yeah, giving up those goals, but that's something that, you know, you sure could go without.
Yep.
So NBC Sports Philly is going to rerun the game actually tonight at 7 o'clock. But also, you know, you mentioned earlier there's a podcast that is basically it's a retelling of the story of the Marathon on Ice. And so, what can we expect on the podcast? Is it? I mean, obviously, it's going to be players' recollections. It's going to be, you know, calls from the game, and you know, who can we expect to hear?
Yeah, it's exactly that. A lot of guys featured in it: Chris Therrien, Keith Primeau, myself. Keith Jones, Rick Tockett, and then on the Pittsburgh side, I believe Bob Bugner, Ron Tugnutt are telling their side of it. Mark Zumoff is the narrator. It was terrifically done. I think it's about 45 minutes long, and it just gives, you know, a detailed account of the game itself, but also talks about the history of the Penguins and Flyers rivalry and this, you know, the stories behind the two franchises and where they are today, where they were at that time. It's a great listen. I mean, for me, even as a guy that was part of that series and a part of that game, it was great to go back and listen to it and kind of get a feel for, you know, where the state of that series is at and where it was at that time. I recommend it highly. I look forward to watching the game again tonight. Although I've never seen the game aired in its full entirety. They always edit it and take certain parts of it out. I want to watch the whole thing from start to finish. I don't know if that's going to be the case tonight, but that would make for a long night of TV.
It would have made for a long night of TV 20 years ago. I stayed up and watched the whole thing. Do you remember what it was like in between periods and in the overtimes, and what was it like after the game?
Yeah, so in between periods, it was you know, first three periods, normal stuff, right? Everybody's focused, you know, you kind of recharge, you know, you don't think anything different of that night. But as you get into the overtimes, you get into the third, fourth overtime period or intermission, you know, it starts to get like guys were starting to get giddy, joking around, like, you know, guys are joking around, you know, like I think Jonesy said, you know, somebody end this thing, I'm going to die or something like that. And Talkin tells a funny story about Jonesy coming in the locker room with cheese pizza and he's got, you know, sauce all over his face, and he's telling guys that this is the time for the fat guys to get it done. Come out of hibernation. So yeah, it's just look, it was serious, and we knew it was a big moment in the series. But we also, as the night went on, we also realized that this was a night to embrace and kind of have fun with it. And fortunately for us, we ended up coming out on the winning side in post game. We certainly had enough adrenaline to celebrate, but man, were we exhausted. I remember coming home on the flight, and the sun was rising when I was driving home.
Whoa.
That's how late it was, and it's only a 45-minute flight from Pittsburgh to Philadelphia. It's not like it's a cross-country flight, so it was a pretty wild night.
In this article I referenced, Pat Boyle says, I was located in the hallway outside the Flyers' cramped locker room. In between the overtime periods, the door would swing open where I saw IVs being administered, pizza boxes being passed around, and the guys washing it down with Pedialyte. Yeah, I would imagine staying dehydrated was a big thing, too. Or staying hydrated, not dehydrated.
Yeah, right. Yeah. Oh, we were plenty dehydrated. Yeah, that's a pretty... That's a pretty accurate description by Pat. You know, we get the pizzas to hold us over from post game till we get to the plane, you know, as a little snack.
Yeah.
But we went through those pizzas pretty quickly. I think by the end of the second overtime, those pizzas were long gone. All the granola bars, the power gels were gone, and guys were cramping. I mean, I was cramping. I know that
to
start that fifth overtime, I couldn't even stretch or scrape my crease because if I did, one part of my body started to cramp up. So I just said, screw it. I'm not even going to stretch and just kind of wing it. And thank God nothing bad happened. But guys were exhausted. The IVs were, you know, were in full use post game. I'm not sure how much weight I lost, but I'm sure it was a lot. And I'm just happy that we came out on the winning side of it, which made for an even better memory.
Yeah, do you even recall how much your pads weighed at the end of the game?
I don't, but I do remember taking my skates off and pouring water out of my skates.
Oh my God.
That's gnarly.
Did you even have an option of coming out of goal after maybe even the third overtime period? Or you know, did they ask you and you elected to stay in the game?
No, I was never asked, and I truthfully, nobody would ever come out of a situation like that. I mean, that would be a terrible situation to put your goalie partner in, having him sit there for six periods and say, okay, now your turn.
Okay.
You know, you know that's a tough situation to walk into really cold, but you'd have to be injured. I mean, look, as a backup, you're always prepared. Anything can happen. And certainly in those situations, you know, someone could go down and pull a muscle through a cramp or whatever. But, never was a thought to do that to John Van Biesbroek. I wanted to see that thing all the way through, even if I would have ended up being on the losing end.
Hey, let's fast forward to the current season, Boosh. Had you, you know, if you were active now and going through what pretty much every athlete is going through in this day and age, how would you be treating it? Would you be training every day? Would you, be working as hard as you could on the off chance that, hey, we're getting started next week, you know?
Yeah, I would. First of all, when the pause happened, I don't think anybody knew how long the pause would last. So I think as a player, you have to be on your toes and you got to make sure you're staying in as good a shape as possible. It certainly helps if you have a home gym in your house. That goes a long way because obviously guys couldn't get to the rink and use the facilities. So it may have been challenging for some guys if they didn't have those types of home gyms. But yeah, I mean, you're trying to stay in shape as best you can, whether it's running, riding a bike, hitting the weights. But, it's tough when you don't know where the finish line is to determine how hard you should train, right? Mm-hmm. And then the other part is you can't get on the ice. That's the one thing that players nowadays do a lot more than we ever did when we played is that, their off season where they put their gear away, they don't do it for as long as we did. I mean, they might take 2-3 weeks. That's it. And then they work on getting back on the ice and working on their skills and keeping their hands going. And for us players back when I was playing, now that was a long, long time ago, but it has changed. I mean, we would take a month and a half, 2 months off the ice and strictly work on off ice stuff. But so I think for these guys, it's challenging for them not to be on the ice for 3 months. And now they're starting to get back on the ice in small groups, which I think is good. Hopefully everything stays as planned and they go to camp on July 10th and they can get after it there. But I'm sure there's going to be some sore bodies when they get back after it because being off the ice for that long is certainly going to be a challenge even for the best athletes.
Well, you raised that point and then, obviously there's the issue of, the last thing you want to do is take out a player with injuries that could be incurred because this is so erratic. And this is, a lot of people are just obviously excited to get sports back, to get the hockey back, but everyone understands everything is going to be sort of a hybrid version of its real self. And the last thing I'm sure players and owners and everybody wants to have happen is in our zeal to get back to that you end up like dramatically affecting a player who cannot play next year, hopefully, when things are more intact. So it's sort of a fine line, I have to imagine, that's being walked.
Yeah, and I think if you look at when they opened up the phase two portion of the return to play, it was a situation where they allowed small groups to get together and practice, and that was in early June. So you think about that, that's kind of like an involuntary skate, an involuntary workout. So you go at it in small groups and allow guys to kind of get their feet wet again. and push themselves, you know, however they feel they need to push themselves. And that gives them a whole month before they would report to a mandatory training camp, where I'm sure then the coaches would, you know, put their hands on what they have to put their hands on as far as like conditioning and systems, et cetera. So I think it's enough time for guys to, even if they didn't have access to home gyms or what have you, the month leading up to this training camp allows these guys to kind of quickly get back into form. But yeah, I think the NHL is certainly concerned about the time off of these players, and they don't want to have a negative effect on these guys going forward, especially with their careers, seeing it's been such a crazy time in this world to begin with. The last thing you want to do is make the situation worse by forcing players into a situation where their careers could be affected. So I'm confident the NHL put a lot of thought into this with the help of the NHL clubs and doctors and experts on how to handle this. And as long as everything, you know, appears to be okay, I'm sure they're going to go forward with training camp, and we'll see how it goes from there. But if I was a player that, you know, was on, say, the Flyers, which was a hot team down the stretch, I would love an opportunity to see this thing out and play for a Stanley Cup. And if they can do it, it would be great. I mean, even though it's going to be under different circumstances, it's still a chance to win a championship, and it'll be an interesting playoff for sure. But one that, you know, if you win it, it's well deserved, that's for sure.
All right, let's say that we do have it. Somebody wins the cup, and with your connection to the, what I think is a great idea to keep everybody safe, and with your connection to the league, maybe you can forward this on to the governing bodies. But we have a Stanley Cup champion. At the game, the winning team has to put on lipstick so that when they kiss the cup, they won't kiss another part where somebody has already kissed. If you can pass that along.
Yeah.
I'm just trying to keep the guys safe.
That is a fantastic idea.
Thank you.
And one that I'm sure most health experts would agree upon. That is terrific.
All right.
How could that go wrong? I will pass that along.
Right.
Listen, another point is that Oscar Lindblom was skating again the other day. Obviously, Nick, what was the form of cancer?
Ewing sarcoma, and he's been battling it all year. And just to see him out on the ice, Boosh, was awesome, to see his smile. Everybody that knows anything about the guy, the kid, really, says he's just the happiest guy on the planet. He's been through hell over the last few months. But every time you see him, he's smiling.
Yeah, and you know, I've heard some sound bites of, you know, him talking afterwards, and it's amazing how grateful and humble he is even through all of this. I mean, you didn't get the sense that this guy was bitter at all when he had every right to be, and you know, a terrific attitude, and you know, what a positive step forward to see him back on the ice. I mean, especially during these times, you know what I mean? Like, to think that a guy that is going through cancer treatment and chemotherapy and all of that, and, you know, you think if anybody would be high risk, it'd be him. I mean, that's such a positive thing that he's remained healthy and now back on the ice. And although I don't think he's going to be cleared to be a part of the team when the playoffs resume, or even be a part of the, you know, what they consider to be the extras. I think if you're a teammate of his and you see him back on the ice, I mean, what a jolt of energy that will give you, seeing a young player like him with a positive attitude and being around the team again. I mean, it's just a fantastic story.
Yeah, he could help without actually even playing, simply by improving the way that he has and being an inspiration to the team. I think that's awesome. Well, listen, Boosh, so they're gonna be showing the game tonight at 7 o'clock, and the podcast also debuts today. And is that already been recorded? All the podcast stuff is done.
Yes, yeah, that was I mean, the work on that thing, I can't imagine, to get all the people to get the sound bites during this time. The work put in by all the producers, terrific job. It's a great listen. It's all done. I think it was released this morning at 7 a.m.
Okay.
So if you have a chance, give it a listen. Marathon on Ice, a well-spent 45 minutes of your time.
Very excellent. Nice.
All right, well, listen, man, it's great to touch base again, and, you know, stay safe as we're all trying to do, and hopefully we'll be talking to you soon, okay?
Yeah, you guys too. Thanks for having me on. Have a great day.
Anytime. Brian Boucher, guys!
Yeah,
reading a little bit more about from Pat Boyle, who used to be with NBC Sports Philadelphia, He was saying that the players could barely lift their legs to get over the boards when they were getting back on the ice. And also, he said that because of NHL rules, no players are allowed to be interviewed between overtime periods. He said, so I interviewed assistant coach Mike Stuthers 5 different times during the game. And he also said that at the end of the whole thing, he said he brought that Chris Therrien came out for an interview. He said he could barely stand. He said, I asked him one question, and then I remember thinking to myself, this guy looks like he's going to pass out. And that's a big dude to pass out. He said, so I wrapped up the interview, and after one question, I sent it back to Philadelphia. So that was... That's a crazy night. And I still want to know if that's the longest game ever.
It's the longest game in modern NHL history. I looked it up. There are 2 games in the 30s that were longer, but they were like the Montreal Maroons or something.
Okay.
Like a franchise that don't exist anymore. So the longest game post-1940 in NHL history. 5 overtimes.
Wow,
man. Yeah.
Wow.
And Keith Jones was the only player without a shot.
He's
the only player in the whole team.
The whole team, yeah.
Who didn't get a shot?
How you go that many hours? Well,
He didn't get one damn shot in.
Wow.
Yeah.
All right. Let's take a break and come back with some bizarre file stories for you, my friend. We shall return in just a few minutes. Stay with us.
93.3 WMMR. Everything that rocks. Proudly supports the American Cancer Society Bikeathon.
Hey, it's Marcus. Cancer won't stop and neither will we. Join myself and Team WMMR on Sunday, August 9th for the 48th annual ACS Bikeathon. This year we're going virtual. The pedal power to finish the ride against cancer may look different, but the mission remains the same. Each Team WMMR rider gets a free team t-shirt, registration and complete details at WMMR.com, and check out our custom Team WMMR apparel providers, Bole and Go Cycling. Team WMMR and the ACS Bikeathon, virtually unstoppable.
The ACS Bikeathon, another way 93.3 WMMR is putting Philly first.
We're actually jumping in a smidge earlier than we normally get in the Bizarre File. So I had one little...
Please.
Little...
tidbit?
Timely tidbit, yes.
A bit of tid?
This is... Could we do it? This is a tidbit. Now we need a little theme music. And...
Yeah.
No, we don't.
A little another character with a colorful hat.
No. By the way, I saw a picture of Casey's beach hat, and Marissa posted on Preston Steve's Instagram account. It's an awesome hat.
It is.
I love that hat.
The only thing I don't like about it, as I talk with a mouthful of Figgy Pop.
Figgy Pop?
Yeah. It's an apple cinnamon super snack, Preston. It's an unbaked organic energy ball.
Mouthful of Figgy Pop, I think, was an album that was released by
Figgy Pop.
Iggy Pop.
Yeah. Mouthful of Figgy Pop.
Mm-hmm.
What was the thing you don't like about it?
It says the salt life on it, and I'm not like really...
It's very offensive.
I'm not really a salt life guy. I see the stickers and...
You're more a pepper life guy?
Well, remember we had... I saw that too, and I remember we had a guy that called and we talked about weird things that just bother you.
Yeah.
And this one guy just hated those salt life stickers on cars.
Oh, okay. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Is that what made you think of it?
Yeah. Okay. So and I don't really care for it either, but I am changing that. I'm putting a different patch on it this week.
Why don't you like salt life?
I just... It's not a thing that I'm into. I see it on
people. He doesn't live the salt life.
I don't live the salt life.
Put the symbols... Put the symbol from the from Cobra, that hammer thing that the guy
what exactly is the salt life?
I think it's more for like fishermen,
like beach
people, like ocean people.
Yeah. Ocean people. Surfers. I'm not an ocean.
Like a mansion people.
Boaters, stuff like that, I assume.
All right, a little more activity than just
I think it's
sitting
more
on the beach.
On the ocean instead of like what I do, which is in front of the ocean.
Okay, so question.
Yes.
Don't reveal. Okay. Do you know what you're going to put on there?
Yeah.
Okay, don't say.
I will not.
What's it going to be, fish or eagles? What do you think, guys? I can't see it being anything else.
How about an eagle with a fish in its mouth?
That's actually a really good idea.
You get them both, Case.
I was thinking just get a whole new hat.
No, but he's got a plan. I know you don't like that. Yeah. But what do you think? Going to be fish or eagles?
I don't know. For some reason, no, I'm not thinking fish or eagles.
Oh, okay. What do you think, Nick?
I think it's going to be more like jokey.
Okay.
I was thinking something either Jersey Shore related, like the crest, you know, something. The
oh, I didn't even think of maybe Delco, too.
Right. That's you could do that.
Oh, Delco, yeah.
Oh, 3 good choices there.
Okay.
Preston.
Well, listen, why don't you ask the guys at the shuffleboard place?
Right.
You know, when you have. They, it's a.
Listen, I think Norman would probably be okay. Stanley, on the other hand, yeah.
What's
so
that on your hat? The salt life.
Yeah.
That is that.
What are you, an a-hole?
You're some kind of a-hole.
All right, what's it going to be?
It's fish.
Okay.
Yeah, it's the red fish donut.
What's that red fish donut?
Okay, the red fish donut thing?
Yeah.
You're going to put that on there?
Yeah, have a patch and everything.
All right.
Fish rock on, man.
Well,
this wasn't the tidbit, though, wasn't it?
This is not the tidbit.
That was the tid. He's got the bit.
I have the tidbit. Disney announced yesterday that it is postponing the reopening of Disneyland. Why are we playing this?
That's tidbit music.
This is the tidbit. Oh, we have a tidbit theme.
Okay.
As we package our guys. So Disney World opening on time, Disneyland not.
Yes. Hold on. More. I love it.
That's the tidbit theme.
I think it's great.
Thank you, Marissa. I have
a... Is it called tidbit?
It's
tidbit. I think that's what she was going for, right? Just tidbit.
Let me try it.
It's not working. Tidbit. All right, so...
it's not working.
They're postponing the reopening of Disneyland, yes.
But Disney World is still on track.
And its other Southern California theme park, which is Disney California Adventure.
Oh, what is that?
I've never heard of
it. Is that one of those quasi-indoor parks?
Disney California.
With the VR stuff?
Adventure. Don't know. Nick, would you mind?
Is that the one with Star Wars?
Maybe that's it, Nick.
No, I don't know. Nick's going to look it
up. It's a Disneyland resort. Superhero.
It's not inside. There's definitely roller coasters.
Yeah, Pixar Land.
It looks like a smaller version with just Disney themed stuff. Like they didn't all right. go all out on it.
It's their low rent. Oh, it's their tidbit.
They have the
Mickey Morse.
We've talked about the Animation Academy. They have that there. They have
Pluto.
Pluto, Avengers Campus.
Goofy.
Yeah. So we're going to do one joke and then one fact.
Okay.
Every other. Pixar Pals. Epic superhero encounters, and so on.
Oh, okay. So this looks, okay, Disney California Adventure Park looks more like just a regular, like a regular amusement park.
Yeah. Yeah. With less of the top themed, environments and stuff like that.
Right.
So, but anyhow, they're going to close
White.
That. They're not going to open that one up. It waits for guidelines from the state. They had planned to reopen them on July 17th. California said it won't issue guidelines until after July 4th. And Disney said, given the time required for us to bring thousands of cast members back to work and to restart our business, we have no choice but to delay the reopening of our theme parks and resort hotels until we receive approval from government officials.
You're talking thousands and thousands of employees. So as these things start to come back online, that's great news.
Yep,
so do what you need to do.
Well, they're going
to delay.
So when
it gets up and running, it'll go for the long haul.
They are going to go ahead and reopen Disney World in Orlando July 11th as scheduled. So that's going to continue on. So this has been your tidbit. So
almost sounds like the Alfred Hitchcock theme.
Where did you get that, Marissa?
I think it is cartoon sneaking up music.
Okay.
All right.
I gotcha. But now it's known as tidbit. Okay. We are now going to do the Bizarre Five.
Now, Bizarre. WMMR presents Bizarre. Kristen and Steve's Bizarre File.
All right, it is brought to you by A.D. Moyer. All locations remain open to provide your building material and hardware needs and are focused on customer and staff safety. Call or email ahead for curbside pickup or delivery, and you can find them at admoyer.com. 6 stolen baby goats are safe with their family after 3 teenagers who stole them brought them back home. The teens involved in the baby goat theft have agreed to do chores around the farm as punishment. The six goats, Fluffy, Lady, Peanut, Nibbles, Pepsi, and Taco.
And John Fillerman.
Were reported stolen from Mooville Creamery in Nashville on Monday.
This must be, I saw footage and the sound was down and they had these beautiful little baby goats. This must be what the story was.
Yeah, this is a
very
follow-up.
Cute.
I actually was going to get to this in the Bizarre File yesterday, but they hadn't found who did it.
Yeah, okay.
It was
an inside job, so to speak, then, right?
Not really. Later in the day, Monday, the goats were returned home safe. Lindsay Westendorp cares for the goats and the other animals at the petting zoo. And Westendorp said that three teenagers brought the baby goats back after she and other family members worked with police and other concerned citizens scouring social media for clues, leading them to find photos of their goat posted by someone else. The parents of the boys recognized what happened when they saw the photo. The group coordinated with police to bring the goats back to the farm.
Okay, so it wasn't an inside job.
No, but they're going to work at the farm as punishment.
That's good.
Yeah.
And maybe they'll learn. If you're not careful, you might learn something.
Westendorp said that there are plenty of unpleasant things to do around the farm that they can do.
You know what? Maybe they'll find out that they kind of like it. Maybe they'll learn a trade.
You never know.
Maybe they'll kill the goats.
If you think you're an adrenaline junkie, you got nothing on this guy. Gordon Precious of Ontario was 94 years and 306 days old when he took a CMH heli skiing summer adventures trip to the Caribou Mountains in British Columbia.
So he jumped out of a helicopter and skied?
This is when they drop you out of a helicopter. Jeez. He and his guide were lifted by helicopter to the top of Nectar Ski Run.
This is going to be great.
And made their way down the mountain.
I can't move! Everything below my neck is dead. Why did I do this?
So, Precious.
That was actually just when they were taking off.
Precious has
he tripped over a carpet.
Has now taken the Guinness World Record for oldest heli skier.
I'm very excited to be above the mountain and skiing. It's a dream come true. All right. God damn! Why did I do this? I must have been insane! I literally just shorted my spinal cord.
So he beat out a 91-year-old. So here's the deal. I don't think he jumps out of the plane.
They pushed him out.
Or out of the helicopter. They land. But they're in ungroomed, you know, virgin territory up on the mountain and ski down.
Right.
So, but still, that's a feat for a 94-year-old.
That is pretty amazing. Yeah.
It's incredible, yeah. people are getting creative when it comes to staying safe from COVID-19, and it has prompted at least one Michigan library to issue a public warning during COVID-19.
COVID-19!
Stop microwaving books.
Wait, why?
A burned...
Oh, no, to kill germs and stuff.
Yeah, a burned book was returned to the Kent District Library after being damaged in a microwave. They said
You should wash them in the shower.
Don't microwave anything from the library. The books have metal in the security radio frequency identification tags.
Yeah.
Which are located inside of the book. And when the metal entered the microwave, a hole was burned into the cover. The library wants its users to know that all materials are in quarantine for 72 hours, by the way, due to the plastic protection on items. So there is no need to take any further sterilization steps. They are using U.S. Centers for Disease Control guidelines to ensure safety for using library materials. You don't have to microwave your books.
Yeah, there's been a lot of needless microwaving of things.
Yes. An Omaha man was arrested early Saturday after police said he doused a downtown bar with pepper spray after being turned away, sending the patrons inside into the streets. Ryan Shufti was booked for disorderly conduct and two counts of assault. The incident occurred at T. Henry's Friday night. Security at the bar shared the video of a man and woman being turned away at the door because the bar was at 50% capacity. Employees said the man appeared to be okay with being turned away, but then seconds later, he turned around and sprayed what appeared to be pepper spray into the bar. According to a staff member, Jacob Pachunka, he said, I turned around and all of a sudden my eyes and throat were burning and I was coughing and everyone around me was coughing. It was slowly spreading through the bar and to the patrons and whatnot. So my first reaction was to get to the bar and make an announcement and get everybody out of the building.
Well, now they had room to let them in.
Employees said that they were able to contact the surrounding bars where a man matching the description of the man caught on surveillance video was found and later arrested.
There's a lot of people with access to pepper spray.
You can just buy it. Yeah. A youngster inadvertently earned his parents a citation when he told a Michigan DNR officer that there were no life jackets.
I'm from Michigan, and we have not enough life jackets.
Excuse me, sir?
I said I'm from Michigan, and we don't have enough life jackets.
I'm sorry, what?
Are you with someone? A caregiver, perhaps? I said I'm from Michigan, and we don't have enough lift tickets.
A caregiver?
Give him some food.
I think he's hungry.
Some water. Definitely some electrolytes.
He's hallucinating.
Sit down, sir. You, you might be having a heat stroke.
It's all part of the monkey heist, Kathy. I'm having a day. There were no life jackets on their fishing boats. The unlucky encounter occurred over Memorial Day weekend when Josh Boudreau, a conservation officer, was patrolling the Dead River Basin when he saw a child excitedly reel in a small walleye. After congratulating the kid on his catch and explaining what a conservation officer was, the kid excitedly exclaimed, "Mommy and Daddy don't have life jackets."
Oh, thanks, you little sweetheart.
Boudreau
And they have drugs, too. Boudreau and they're swingers.
Laughed off the comment, assuming the child was referring to the fact that the adults were not wearing them, unlike the kids. However, upon further inspection of the safety equipment, it was found that neither parent had a personal flotation device for themselves. And a citation was issued for failing to maintain and carry safe equipment on their vessel. They didn't have any life jerkets.
In Michigan.
In Michigan. Some people are wondering if I had a stroke in the middle of it.
Like the Ryan Seacrest audio.
All right, that's what I have in the bizarre file. All right, we're going to take a break. We're going to come back in a second, and we'll get to the lesson question. By the way, the monkey heist Daily Rush video is already back. It's clear that Nick Murphy is back with us here in the studio, and now Daily Rush videos are cranking out before the show's even over.
Fast and furiously.
You can see that at PrestonandSteve.com, and you can watch it now. And it's sponsored by Punchline Philly, Fishtown's first comedy club, restaurant, and bar. We'll be back in just a moment.
Love Preston and Steve and WMMR? Check out WMMR.com for more of everything that rocks.
Say goodbye to juggling paper coupons and missing out on the best deals. Download the Acme mobile app today to have your own personal grocery guru right in your pocket. Use it to plan your shopping list like a pro. Get personalized deals on the products you buy most and choose your shopping style. Whether it's in-store, delivery, or drive-up, where an experienced Acme associate will carefully select, bag your order, even pick up your prescriptions from the pharmacy, and bring it all right to your car. Acme. Fresh foods, local flavors.
Back with more of the Preston and Steve Show podcast.
There's another Daily Rush video that is available as well, and it's called Casey's Mom Parking Trick. It says, unfortunately, it doesn't work with the PPA's parking app. I don't remember what the parking trick was.
I don't know what the trick is. I know the premise is that, I mean, you use that parking app, and I did it. And then the one time I parked my mom's car, and I used her.
Oh, because it wasn't the same car.
It wasn't the same
car.
Yeah.
All right.
Well, it must have led to hijinks, because it's one of our Daily Rush videos.
Always yucks abound.
Yeah, that's
right. Zany and wacky.
Zany, wacky, and what was the word I said?
Goofy. Goofy.
Yeah, no, there was something on our own bio where I'm like, really?
I think it was goofy.
On our website. That's
and a little goofy. Okay, or something like that. Was it goofy? Like,
I don't know.
Yeah. I got an email after we talked about that in the parking, the meter app, I guess.
Right.
And I don't know if it's true or not. It was just a listener, but the guy said that it makes it look like you're getting a deal and that you're paying cheaper prices because you get the app, but that the price increases as the hours go on. So if you re-up from your phone, like if you're somewhere and you're, you know, say your 2 hours are up and you have to re-up again, the price actually increases. You're not paying the same. Okay. That's what he says.
Well, that's lovely.
I'd rather do it though, instead of besides it's going to be less and less of an option to feed coins or you put your credit card into a machine, and if you can be, you know, park in the place and not have to worry about it, it's great. Also, you can take it down to the minute. You know, you're not just you don't just arbitrarily, okay, I think I'm going to be this amount of time.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you can stop the payment once you leave the area.
Yes. Okay, so I'm going through the lesson questions now to get you ready to win something. We do have a $50 Meineke gift card for the location in the Mayfair section of Northeast Philadelphia. There's a lot of stuff we could go with here today. This is a sign of a fun radio show today. It's thick.
Thick how much?
I think I want to go with this. According to Steve, what ceremony is on the back of the $2 bill?
It's really impressive.
It's not the signing of the Declaration of Independence, I will tell you that. So what ceremony is on the back of a $2 bill? 215-263-WMMR. Let's find out if you know the answer. Give us a call. We'll do the trash while you are calling in.
The trash business is a gold mine.
93.3 WMMR with Preston and Steve's Hollywood Trash.
All right, Steve, what's going on this morning?
Well, Jenny Slate is leaving the Netflix animated series Big Mouth, saying her character Missy is half black and should be played by a black actress. While widely being praised for her decision, Slate was called out by Peppa Pig, saying the role should actually go to an animated American.
Oh, my God.
Dennis Quaid addressing the 39-year age difference between him and his new wife, Laurie Savoy. Laura Savoy, Quaid tells People magazine, quote, "People are going to think what they're going to think, but all I know is there is an audible pop when I pull out."
Whoa!
So he's happy.
Yeah. All right, then.
And finally, Reese Reese Witherspoon telling Variety that she really had no idea what homosexuality was until she got to Los Angeles. Witherspoon says she remembers stepping off the bus only to see Richard Simmons, Jim J. Bullock, and Bruce Valanche doing new jumping jacks. Wow. And that's your Hollywood trash.
All right, so let's see if you know the answer to this question. what ceremony is on the back of a $2 bill? 215-263-WMMR, the number, and it is Eric that we're going to go to. Hey, Eric.
Yes.
All right, what ceremony is on the back of a $2 bill?
It is a bris.
You got it, buddy. Hang on a second, Eric. Since you got it right, we're going to give you a $50 Meineke gift card for the location in the Mayfair section of Northeast Philadelphia, and they are offering 25% off to any customer who's had their catalytic converter stolen or cut off their vehicle. They helped out local favorite Nick's Roast Beef when they had that happen during the pandemic, and they want to make sure they offer it all to Philadelphia, and Meineke wants you to know that they are here for you during the rough time and is going to help any way they can. That's Meineke at 6140 Frankford Avenue.
Now, Preston and Steve's Music View on 93.3 WMMR.
Yeah! All right. Music News brought to you by HERS, the official chip of taking your summer to the next level. When it comes to snacking this summer, keep it Philly, Philly, and make it HERS. HERS forever good. Seether has set August 28th as the release date for its eighth studio album, which is called
C-3PO?
No, this is, I don't know if this is Latin or what. C. Vis Pecum Parabellum.
I don't know
what all that means, but anyhow. The title of the 13-track follow-up to 2017's Poison the Parish translates to, "If you want peace, prepare for war."
Yes. Okay. Yeah.
Parabellum is John Wick.
Yeah. So the band has also shared the first single from the disc called Dangerous, accompanied by an animated music video created by Turkish director Mertkan Mertabilik. Frontman Sean Morgan said,
"This has been a Mertkan production."
Yeah. "These songs are carefully created to nestle in your ears like a tiny velvet rabbit clutching a switchblade."
What?
Wow.
All right. Wow.
Or like a seed in your navel.
That too.
Ew.
ew. It's just a ew. he said, "This whole album is kind of me going through that process. I'm exposing myself to a degree I'm not normally comfortable with, but I think it's okay. I'm proud to be a little bit more vulnerable on this album." C.V.'s Pacem Parabellum also marks the debut of touring guitarist Corey Lowry, Morgan's friend of 16 years, as a full-fledged member of Seether. Skillet has shared a reimagined version of the song Save Me, which is a cool tune.
It is a great song.
The original version of the track can be found on the band's 10th full-length album, Victorious, which was released last August. Bassist and singer John Cooper said about the song, "I was singing that I could almost hear Five Finger Death Punch doing that chorus. And then I said, I just think that could be, this could really be a Skillet song. Instead of moving towards ultra metal, I can move a little bit towards romantic and sad." He said, "I know it doesn't sound like Five Finger. It sounds like Skillet. But for a musician, If they really picked apart the guitar and drum parts in the chorus, you can hear that being a Death Punch chorus with his voice, meaning Ivan Moody singing it.
They impressed me seeing them, you know, live. Yeah. They're solid.
Yeah.
They're the most well-groomed, I don't know if you call them heavy metal or not, but like everything about them is cropped.
Yeah.
You know, and made up properly, and their beards are on point.
They take care of themselves.
Yeah.
Totally fleek, right?
They're on fleek, yeah, for sure. They're very fetch.
Michigan.
Huh?
Barry Michigan.
Pearl Jam.
Oh, Barry Jam. What?
Pearl Jam.
Pearl Jam.
Pearl Jam.
I quit.
Pearl Jam. This is delicious. What is this? Well, that's Pearl Jam. We make it right here at the farm.
I'm definitely drinking.
We have some.
This just made up my mind for
Came in on the truck this morning from Michigan.
I mean, listen.
I was on the fence whether I was going to have a couple cocktails tonight. I'm definitely drinking.
Well, it's Thursday. It's almost Friday.
Yeah, the weekend.
And listen, in your defense, Pearl starts out with the word pear.
Pearl Jam. Performed at a virtual benefit concert All in Washington last night. It was the band's first public live performance in 2 years, by the way. Members of the Seattle outfit performed from their respective homes, and they were joined by former Red Hot Chili Peppers guitarist Josh Klinghoffer, who was due to support the band on their international tour this year. Was he going to be a solo artist performing,
yeah.
Nick?
Okay. Yeah, he was going to be the opening act, but he played with them, virtually, last night. And that song, Dance of the Clairvoyants, that we've been playing, Stone Gossard, who usually plays rhythm guitar, plays bass on it, not Jeff Amon.
And fellow Seattle artist Slater Kinney, Macklemore, and Sir Mix-a-Lot were among the other artists who performed during the All-NWA live stream. The concert aimed to raise funds for coronavirus relief in Washington State. And then one last thing, Metallica's Some Kind of Bracket, which saw fans vote for the band's greatest songs ever, is now over. And the winner is 1986's Master of Puppets.
Of course. Yeah.
From the album of the same name. And the voting featured 32 pairs of songs clashing against each other and advancing in a total of 5 rounds, with Master triumphing over 1988's One, which was a big breakout song for them, too.
Those would be the top 2 songs for me.
Okay. The original 64 tunes included in the bracket were selected based on the highest Spotify plays and multiplying them by how many times those tracks have been played live. On its way to the final round, Master of Puppets defeated Dyer's Eve, Atlas Rise, Ride the Lightning, Sad But True, and Fade to Black. The band wrote about the classic song, No Wonder That Thing Is in the Library of Congress. Thanks for playing along with us.
Speaking of brackets, to Jackson and Sarah, have they still done
Attack of the Brackets?
Battle of the Brackets or whatever it was?
No. It's a good series.
I think they stopped doing that once the company stopped caring about podcasts.
Now they're doing their gaming thing.
They're doing a gaming thing.
Was there a gaming thing?
I don't know. I just made that up.
All right, damn it.
Okay.
Yeah, hell,
that would have been cool.
Hell.
I thought the brackets was a lot of fun.
You were
on it. I was on it.
Yeah, I enjoyed it. We did a drummer bracket thing. It was a lot of fun.
And we did a James Bond thing.
And that's all I have in music news for you this morning. We're going to take a break, and we're going to come back, get ready to wrap this thing up. Letter Day Word of the Week will be a part of that. Stay there.
What's new?
Glad you asked.
Godsmack. Killers.
I'm throwing caution. What's it gonna be?
Green Day.
We just keep on dreaming.
New music, more of everything that rocks.
On 93.3 WMMR.
Sorry, I'm reading a text message. It says, Prester is in retrograde. Prester.
Prester.
Uh-huh. Will he get any better for the remainder of the show? Stay tuned to find out. It is 10:26 as we are wrapping up the show on this Thursday morning, which I'll get tired of saying this eventually, but it's already Friday. That's great.
Yes.
I love that philosophy from Casey. And I want to thank Brian Boucher for being on the program today. You know what? Sports is doing what they can until regular seasons do kick up, and one of the interesting things is playing back some classic and sometimes groundbreaking moments that have happened. And in 2000, the Flyers were in the semifinals with the Penguins, and game 3 went for 8 periods, 5 overtime periods, and it was a marathon night, and they're rerunning it tonight at 7 o'clock. And I don't think they're running it unedited, right? Isn't that what Boucher said? Because that would go.
They can't, yeah, because it would end at 2 a.m. or whatever. Yeah.
So it's about the game, and it'll be at 7 o'clock on NBC Sports Philadelphia. But it was nice for Brian to kind of recap some of that and give us, because it was at the time in modern history, it's the longest game ever played.
Astonishing.
Yeah, here's what they can do, though. I mean, how much time is in between periods, Nick? Like 20 minutes?
15.
15 minutes, so you can subtract all of that.
Yeah, I mean, they could do a lot of it and edit out some of the boring parts or whatever.
Just do it at a quadruple time.
Yeah.
They could do that. Just speed it up.
Speed it up.
It would work. So it was good, cool to have Boosh on. Pierre Robert is here. Hey, man.
Call him Boosh.
Boosh.
Yep.
Wow.
Brian Boucher.
I call him Pear.
Call him Pear. Like, you know, Pearl Jam. Pearl Jam.
Well, they actually started, this is not widely known, but they were all facing individual crises in their lives. And so they thought of that as peril. So P-E-R-I-L.
Pearl Jam.
Is actually where they were going to start the band. But then dramatic shifts occurred.
Right.
And Eddie saw pearls on Barbara Bush one day. And he goes, I think we'll call it Pearl Jam.
It's wild how that stuff happens.
Names, you know, where names come from. And then he remembered that commercial where they dropped a pearl in the shampoo.
Was it Palmolive? Or Prel?
Prel.
Yes.
You learn stuff here.
Well, so you're saying Pearl Jam could have been called Barbara Bush.
It could have been.
Yeah.
Yeah. And yeah, it could have been.
And then there was a band called Bush.
And that's why they didn't go with that.
Yeah. Gavin got that name when he was on an island one time, and he was high, and he kept looking at this bush.
Are you serious?
Yeah.
Oh.
No. none of what I said was.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it's par for the course with this show, so I never know what's a fact and
well,
what's not.
Well, the great thing about your program is on a moment's notice, it can just... I call my show Left Turns, where I musically will divert or something. But, I mean, you do slam on the brakes and immediately turn right, left, center, derail. It's a beautiful thing.
We'll go to a different dimension from time to time.
To me, it's an act of art.
Ah, thank you, sir.
I love it.
Art, that's what we do here.
That's what we do.
Often
artists
get mistaken for high art.
That's why you are all artists.
Right. I love it. Well, could you sketch a letter for us here, sir?
No.
Okay.
Preston and Steve on 93.3 WMMR.
Now, the Daily Letter.
All right, and the Preston and Steve show is brought to you today by the letter.
E. There you go. E as in Earl, Duke of Earl.
All right, and we have a package of 20 digital movies, including Birds of Prey, Gone in 60 Seconds, Just Mercy, The Rhythm Section, Star Wars, Rise of Skywalker, and many more. For a complete list, you can click contest at WMMR.com. We'll give that away tomorrow, which is great.
Just a side thing, Preston, you remember in The Man with Two Brains, he said Duke of Earl, mm-hmm. when he's going to inject Windex into the hooker, and she's singing, Doke, Doke.
No, I need to go back and see that movie again. One of Martin's early movies. What's up on the show? Oh, my God. Okay, I see Pierre's laughing. Greg Monahan.
Brennan Gregg has created a poster for Pear Jam.
Pear Jam.
And it's got an image of a pear, and it says underneath it the band's name in a really nicely done graphics.
That's beautiful. On the pear is that little Pearl Jam guy.
Right.
Stick man.
The stick man, yeah.
Yeah.
That's outstanding. God, you work fast, Greg Monahan.
Thank you, Grin and Greg.
What's happening today, man?
Well, we got workforce blocks, which will be cool on this Thursday.
Is your mask stuck on the microphone?
The elastic part that goes around my ear just got stuck in the wiring of the microphone. Tom Petty, workforce blocks of Tom Petty, Cake, and Bon Jovi.
Should be a lovely day today. I want to thank our sponsors. Preston and Steve show has been brought to you today by HERS, the official chip of taking your summer to the next level. Also brought to you by Dunkin', official coffee of the Preston and Steve show, and by Acme Markets, fresh foods, local flavors. Tomorrow on the program, one of our favorite guests from the Franklin Institute, he is the lead astronomer, Mr. Derek Pitts, will be joining
us. Great stuff. Always takes the... takes the smart stuff and dumbs it down for us.
Yep, so we'll spend some time with him and a few other things as well. That is it. We are done. Rage on and have a great day, and we shall see you tomorrow, friend. Bye-bye.
The Preston and Steve Love You, Hate You Line.
When you go into a store, put a f***ing mask on. And it's exclusive. Oh, I don't want to. Bullshit. My entire life is just a bunch of s***. I don't want to do, but I still f***ing do it. Put your masks on, you f***.
Next message.
It's a story of a boy and his dream about a monkey. Until the heist. The monkey heist. Stream it on Netflix today.
Next message.
I went to get a coffee this morning, and I asked for liquid sugar. They put regular sugar in there. And you know what I say about that? It stinks! It all stinks! Do you think I want to have a coffee with thin? No, I want liquid sugar! I want to taste the cream! Not that! It stinks! Nothing is ever!
The Preston and Steve Love You, Hate You Line.
Call 484-434-1333.
MMR rocks.
Brought to you by DellToyota.com and DellChevrolet.com.
Jack, sell them for less.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most fans of country music, we're excited to learn that Luke Combs was back in the studio working on his next album. We've come up with our list of iconic Luke Combs music videos. Yes, Lovin' On You made the cut. Text Luke to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Luke to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.